It's time for Mac Break Weekly. The rumors are starting to fly as we get closer and closer to Apple's September announcement date. What we know about the new iPhones, maybe there'll be three of them, why they won't be bendy anymore, and what the Apple TV could bring. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 467, recorded Tuesday, August 11th, 2015, of Mouses and Macs. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost, automated investment service that is the most sophisticated way for you to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit Wealthfront.com/MacBreak to sign up and get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's Wealthfront.com/MacBreak. And by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for a simple payment solution, check out Braintree. With one easy integration, you can offer your customers every way to pay, period. To learn more and for your first $50,000 in transactions fee-free, go to BraintreePayments.com/MacBreak. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the best way to create a beautiful website or online store. Enter the offer code MacBreak and get 10% off. Squarespace. Build it beautiful. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers all the Apple news in incessantly obsessive detail. That's because Alex Lindsay is here, all the way from Rwanda.
Hello, hello.
Gosh, you look good. Even in Rwanda, you look good. Do you just carry like a length of fiber optic cable with you everywhere you go?
It's a very long one, and it's really hard to get through security and get into the plane. You know, they're like, you know, this is going to be a drag on the plane. I'm like, you know, I got to do what I got to do, you know, so.
It was fun. I got to follow your trip to Kilgali via your Instagram. You decided to kind of blog it as you go.
Yeah, I'm taking. I usually can't talk about most of what I do. So when I'm actually traveling to Africa, I usually can take pictures of everything. So it's all like my little vacation from what I normally do every day. So I'm testing out a camera. So all those photos are from the DX01.
Oh, you have the DX01. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, I'm testing it. So
Trey Ratcliffe had that with him, but he couldn't talk about it. He was NDA'd or something. It looks about the size of a GoPro.
Yep. And it's I don't have it right in front of me.
Is it an extreme sports camera or is it something else?
No. It makes your iPhone like a SLR.
Wait a minute. It needs an iPhone? Anyway, we'll talk about it. Probably it sounds like your pick of the week.
Later. No, I'm not going to talk about it today. Okay. I can just say that I'm playing with it. I can't talk much more about it.
Can you even show it?
I'm not going to review it or anything. I'm not going to show it too much, but people can look at the results on Facebook. Okay. And I can show it later. But
so it doesn't have an interface. It's just Bluetoothing to the pictures to your phone. Even,
it's a hardware interface. So it's Lightning. So it's much faster connection.
So, okay.
Yeah. So it's
okay.
It really turns your phone into a viewfinder and a controller. And it's pretty slick. So anyway, I'm testing it right now. I'm taking lots of photos so all the stuff on Facebook is me testing the camera and also sharing what I do down here.
Oh, it's Facebook? Is that where you're posting that?
Yeah. Just throwing those on Facebook.
And by the way, they have a whole website devoted to it. So it's not like you're talking out of school here. I mean,
No. I know I can talk about it a little bit. I just don't want to get too far into it until it's until a little further down the path. But people should check it out. I'll decide whether it's a pick of the week in a little bit. But it's definitely worth checking out. It's the most interesting camera that I've seen in a long time.
DX01, and let me it's only $600. That's not too bad. And it includes film, which is nice. All right.
Oh, yeah.
Leatherette case.
Yeah, but, you know, if people want to see what that looks, the end results look like, that's what I'm kind of playing with down here.
Nice. Apparently, just by going there, the DX01 camera was added to my shopping cart. So.
Wow.
Convenience.
Always be closing.
One click. Hey, there he is, Andy Iannocco, the Chicago Sun-Times, joining us from Boston. So we've got Rwanda. We've got Boston. Nice to see you, Andrew.
As always, nice to see you too, Leo.
People keep asking me, as if I'm your editor, when you're going to file your MacBook review.
It's been up for a while.
Good.
Excuse me. It's been in for a while. We'll
it's been in for a while.
Oh. Yes.
We will see it soon, no doubt.
We will see it soon. If nothing else, I'll post it on my blog. I'll release it as an audiobook.
And also with us from Montreal, or some people say Montreal, Renee Ritchie of iMore.com. Is it Montreal?
I mean, I guess it depends on how you speak. If you're one of the Francophones, here it's Montreal. If you're one of the Anglophones, maybe it's Montreal.
But not Montreal.
Montreal.
M-U-N-T-R-E-A-L. Montreal. It's
Boise, Idaho, instead of Bois, Idaho.
Bois.
I have no idea.
I live in the Bois.
Actually, it's Boise.
Boise.
Everybody says Boise. They're
it's Boise.
Wrong. It's Boise.
Yeah.
Yes.
Are you from Boise?
I am from Boise.
If you said I'm from Boise to me, I'd think you were kind of strange.
Boise, Idaho. That's how you say it. Everybody outside of Idaho says Boise.
It's Boise.
With a Z, but it's Boise.
Boise. I didn't know that. Yeah. I know it's Nevada. I mean, Nevada.
Missouri.
Do you say Missouri? I always feel a little pretentious when I say Missouri.
People from Missouri don't seem to say Missouri, so I don't know anymore.
I gave a talk in Kansas City, and that was my first question. Is it Missouri or Missouri? And that was it for about 7 minutes of debate and discussion.
They can't even agree.
Is it Quebec or Quebec?
I mean, I know it's not Quebec. I know that.
So many tourists with so many Quebecs.
But we're not here to talk semantics. We're here to talk Mahaha. And let's see. There is Mahaha news, mostly rumor news, unfortunately, because we're heading into the silly season. John Patchkowski, who has moved over to BuzzFeed but is still doing his excellent Apple coverage, says the fall iPhone event will be on a Wednesday, the 9th of September. Now, if you read a little farther into it...
I really want to know if we're going to get Oompa Loompas. That's...
Oompa Loompas.
Yeah, I think that would be a really great addition to...
that is the best picture.
Apple Loompas.
Apple Loompas.
The credit on that photo on John's article is BuzzFeed Warner Brothers. sources... This is the actual quote, despite the headline. Sources familiar with Apple's plans tell BuzzFeed News, a.k.a. John Patchkowski, the company intends to hold a special event the week of September 7th, with Wednesday the 9th being the most likely date. But doesn't Apple always have these on Tuesday?
Not always. I mean, they've had events on Thursday. The week, as far as I know, the week has been set forever. It's almost like WWDC now. It's like just, unless Apple changes it, it's the second week in September for the event.
And the third week in September for the launch.
Right. Whether it's a Tuesday or a Wednesday. And the iPad stuff, I think, were the most interesting things in John's piece.
Yeah. So he says the iPad Pro seems to be a wild card still.
For September.
And also, I think that the most likely reason that it's moved out is also to have a weekday to set up before after Labor Day.
So Labor Day is the 6th.
So it just pushes it out to
the 7th.
It's very expensive to work on that day.
Right. We are, according to this article, expecting an iPhone with Force Touch, an improved camera system, and a significantly faster and more powerful wireless chip. More power-efficient wireless chip. And
I'm really interested to see if they're going to go to a 4K camera. I mean, a lot of the cameras have been, you know, some of the smartphones are starting to come up with that. And especially if the new Apple TV, you know, or if they have an Apple TV that has 4K, it seems like you'd want to be able to shoot images with your phone that would end up, you know, video on your phone that would end up on properly on your Apple TV.
Do you like
TV.
The mobile 4K cameras,
yeah.
Alex?
Sorry?
Do you like the mobile 4K cameras, like the Android phones that have 4K? Have you tried them?
I have not tried them. I don't have a reference for it.
Yeah, Samsung's done it for a couple of generations of its phones.
Yeah. That's why I think that if Apple were to do something like that, I don't think it would be so much as shooting 4K video, so much as giving you editing and camera move options when you put it into iMovie or even on the mobile end, the ability to sort of recompose and reframe it without the ability to have a digital zoom inside the phone itself.
Yeah, and I think that if I was going to give up light sensitivity for resolution, I'd still rather have more light sensitivity. You know, so if they stayed where they were at 1080p and made it better at night, I'd be happy with that.
What's the relationship between megapixels and light sensitivity?
Well, the photosites on the chip, it depends on how big the chip is. I mean, you can have a chip that has great low light that is that it also has a great resolution, but it's how big those photosites are and really the signal-to-noise ratio on those photosites, you know, and how much errata, occurs. The smaller that photosite is, and I mean, like, basically what's creating that pixel, each one of those, the smaller that is, the less sensitive it's going to be, the more grain you're going to get because it's basically gaining up, you know, to get that low light information. So larger chips tend to be better in low light, especially.
They're making
now
a big deal about the size of their pixels for the last couple of years.
Right. Sub-micron pixels are less light sensitive.
Yeah, and so during the day in the sunlight, you're just going to get a great image that is very high resolution. But most of us are shooting a lot of stuff. We're shooting birthday parties, and we're shooting our dinners, and we're shooting things with friends in the evening, and all of those things are things that are that you want to have better light sensitivity. That's why you have all that motion blur, because it's trying to lower the frame rate or lower the shutter speed so that you get enough light in there to properly expose it. And so you ended up with a lot of blurry images.
Yeah.
It's 1.5 right now.
1.5 microns. Yeah.
It's hard to compare the two, though, and see. In the last year or two, it's been harder for me to see the advantage of the lower megapixel count on iPhones as I get to compare them with something like the Galaxy S6, where you can sort of see where I guess the iPhone 6 and the 6 Plus did a better job with the color. Maybe there's a little bit more detail in the shadows, but it's at this point, it's not something that you can't correct with just touching a slider a little bit. And between those two models of phones specifically, I'd much rather have the increased megapixel count so that, like I said, so you can crop in to have a much, much better, higher resolution, a much better photo with a much tighter crop than you could with 8 megapixels. 8 is starting to look like not a whole lot you can do with it.
Yeah, the rumor's for 12 this year, I think.
Yeah.
12 megapixel Sony sensor.
I think what we're really learning is that it's the software, not the hardware, that makes the difference, certainly in the Apple cameras.
It's their chipset. They've had, which is one of the other interesting things, because we should get the next generation of Apple chipset, and they've been making their own silicon now for 3 or 4 years. They had Swift and then Cyclone. This year it was Typhoon, so maybe it's Tropical Storm or Hurricane next year. Or this
so you're
year,
saying I mean, the A8 and the new, presumably A9,
yeah,
would have something in them, some secret sauce that makes pictures better?
They have. That's been Apple's big deal, because unlike Nokia, they don't put giant Carl Zeiss lenses in to capture really good light. And unlike Google, they don't upload things to the server and auto-awesome them. So they try to do all their magic inside the image signal processor. And every event they have, Phil Schiller spends a good 5 minutes talking about the image signal processor. And that's what does things like the intelligent burst mode and all the auto white balancing and auto focusing that they do in the camera app. Almost all of it is done on chip for them, and they put a lot of power behind that chip. So maybe they don't capture the best light, and maybe they don't do anything with it server side, but they try to get you the best, what they call the best everyday picture out of the shots that you take.
Well, it certainly succeeds. Then it would explain why Apple hasn't been really playing the megapixel race.
But isn't that the interesting thing about the photography in the past couple of years? SIGGRAPH is going on this week. Google had their presentation, which they're showing off different technologies that once again underscore that their point of view is that if you use I think it's even more than Google, you have a camera that is interpreted as a capture device, that the whole point of it is to simply collect as much data as possible so that another piece of software, either on the phone or on a server or on a desktop, can then build whatever picture that person wants. They showed off a feature where if you move your phone a little bit for the left and the right when you're taking a sequence of pictures, it can do things like figure out that if you're shooting through a window, it can remove everything that is in the window and leave a clear picture behind it. So in the end, it really comes down to results. People want to tap a button, get a picture, and think that's an awesome photo, whether they get it because they attached a $600 doohickey to the side of their phone with an actual good lens and an actual good image sensor, or whether you go through the Apple approach, which is to put this amazing image processor inside the device, or whether you use Google's approach, which is to say, we can even take a cheap $200 camera. By the time it goes up to the server, then back down to the user, it's going to be pretty awesome. It's interesting to see which of these three approaches is going to be the most relevant for people who in the end, let's admit it, are just posting stuff to Facebook and Instagram.
So if I went out and bought the DxO1, which connects to my iPhone via Thunderbolt, would I get the benefit of the image processing chip? No.
No.
Well, it's got its own image processor.
It has its own.
DxO makes their own processors. Right. In fact, they make the processors for a lot of people.
So, well, and that's the other thing is Apple's using the same lens hardware as other people. They among others, Sony. Although, does Apple kind of customize the camera's lens before they put it in?
They assemble, like they buy the sensors, but I believe they have the like things like the lenses actually made in-house.
So the sensors are in common with other cameras, but that's just the sensor.
Yeah, but I believe, again, it's the chipset where they put most of their time and focus on the camera stuff.
Makes sense. By the way, one of the rumors, and this comes from the fairly credible source Evleaks, is that there won't be one or two, but three iPhones.
This is so silly.
You don't believe this?
No, it's not that I don't believe it. It's that all these news sources go and post, like, he just puts up a quick tweet saying, sounds like the iPhones, like, first of all, every iPhone has always arrived concurrently. I don't believe there's ever been a year where Apple released iPhones more than once. The debate is whether there's going to be an iPhone 6C or not. Some people says there won't be because it hasn't leaked. But the iPod Touch with the new processor didn't leak. So if you just change the processor and a few other things, it's easy not to have it leak. So the debate around this, I find, is a little bit incredulous.
The 6S Plus, would be the logical, you know, successor to last year's phones. 6C, it's been a while since they made a C. They made the 5C. They never made a 6C.
It solves a problem for them. So the reason they made the 5C is because the original 5 was going to go down the minus $100 phone, and the 5S was going to come up on top of it. But there's very little visually distinguish those phones. So if you go into a store and you see a 5 and you see a 5S, the 5 looks really good enough. I mean, maybe you don't need Touch ID. And then Apple's average selling price goes down, which is one of the most important things from the average selling price of phones. So, and also the iPhone 5 is hard to manufacture. It's a more difficult manufacture because it has those chamfered edges and things. So the iPhone 5C, it let them test out ideas like colored iPhones, plastic cases, but also made it very visually different. You knew you didn't have the flagship phone. So this year, if the iPhone 6 goes down, the minus $100 phone, and the iPhone 6S is on top of it, again, maybe people don't care about Force Touch or the better camera, and it makes it easier for them to buy the lower price phone, even if you do reduce the memory or do some other things with it. So it behooves Apple in general to make sure that their flagship phone is always visually distinct and sort of otherwise lets people know that you have the high-end iPhone, and that's where the C line sort of works for them. So this year it would make sense for them to have a C phone as well, because it would stop them having an iPhone 6 at a minus $100 price point.
Yeah. And then the other thing that I thought was interesting is the rumor that all of the stuff will be announced the same day, the same month, not a September phone launch and an October iPad launch. But Pachkowski implies it'll all be on in that September, that first week in September.
See, iPads are like the iPad mini will get smaller and it'll get a better chip, and the iPad Air will get a better chip, but that's not startling. Those are almost procedural updates at this point, and whether you can linchpin an event, because for the last 2 years, it's been iPad and Mac events in October. But if it's just really, we have, it's not even Touch ID to add to them anymore.
Right.
And Force Touch may not be ready for iPad, so you have very little to say other than this is a speed bump. So if they want to clear room for an iPad Pro or some other device, you get the iPhones, the iPads, and the Apple TV.
That makes sense.
September.
So there might be an October iPad Pro announcement along. And I wouldn't be surprised to see new Macs based on the new Intel chip, which is just starting to come out.
Yep.
Right?
And the rumored 4K iMac.
Skylake?
Skylake.
Skylake. Which has much better battery life and more power, more performance.
Yeah, the talk update, the architecture improvement.
Yeah.
For desktop, it's arguable how much difference that makes, but it's still a better architecture for desktop anyway.
And mobile should make a big difference because of the battery life. Yeah.
That's a huge question, because they released updates for the MacBook is already on Broadwell. The 13-inch MacBook Pro is on Broadwell. The MacBook Airs are on Broadwell. The 15-inch got bumped to a newer version of Haswell 1.5, whatever you want to call it. But it hasn't gone to Broadwell yet. So do they revamp the MacBooks? They're very popular computers.
It's early, but on the other hand, it might be a time to do it.
Super interesting year, Leo, because usually these things were gotten to the point where we could predict them fairly accurately, and now there's a bunch of wild cards moving around.
Watch OS. When would they show that? At this September event?
As soon as they have time. They've just said fall.
Yeah.
I think it would be concurrently with iOS 9, wouldn't it?
I'm thinking they're going to want to make a big deal out of it because I'm you tell me I'm wrong. I think the watch is not selling very well, or not as well as they'd hoped, and arguably a flop. But watchOS 2.0 could bring it back with the ability for it to run standalone apps, and that might they might want to make a big deal about that. No, you disagree?
No, it's not arguably a flop. There's as we said once or twice before, when Apple has a flop, that's what HTC would love to have, and that's what Motorola would love to have, a flop of that magnitude. I still think of it in terms of trying to get a lunar module into space. There's the first stage. We just lit up the first stage. The second stage gets you to the moon. I think that the Apple Watch is in orbit right now, and when apps come, that's what it turns it into, an actual lunar exploration vessel. It's not as much as what it will be once the ecosystem is a little bit better for it.
Well, it pisses people off when I say flop, but I actually think it is a flop.
Well, how do you define flop? That's
flop as in a category that is not going anywhere.
No.
I think they've only sold as many as.
Actually, I'm not considering sales because I don't care about sales.
I've actually trended downward my expectations of what Apple would have to do to make a success of this, or what really any other company has to do to make a success of a watch. All it has to do is be a cool watch. And Apple has definitely made a cool watch that people are going to want to buy.
I think that's cool.
And they've also demonstrated that they can at least sell it in volume enough that to justify keeping on selling it. So whether or not it will ever become ubiquitous in the way that you can't enter into any public place without seeing Apple logos on phones and laptops, that remains to be seen. But I think they've demonstrated they can produce a successful smartwatch.
Well, maybe it's a successful smartwatch. I still think the category is a flop.
We had a discussion.
In other words, you're saying is relative to others, but I think the category itself is a flop. I don't think you want it. I don't think anybody wants it. Wearing one.
I don't know. I have to say that I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure whether I'd want one. I mean, whether I'd like it or not. I actually took a lot of time to go ahead and buy one, and so I really like my old watch.
Right.
But I don't think I could go back.
Really?
I mean, you know, it's
so you still wear it. See, I stopped wearing it. It's like. Well, it just annoys me at this point. It's telling me to stand up at 10 minutes. It's stupid.
I think for me, the standing up thing makes me a little crazy, especially when it doesn't realize that I'm in bed in Kigali.
Beeping and buzzing and booping for no purpose all the time.
But for me, being able to stay in contact and look down and get texts and Slack and those types of things on, and being able to look, you know, I want to be a little bit more interactive. I want to be able to answer Slack, you know, that kind of thing. But, and being able to really clearly have my time zones and, you know, all the things that I do, I have to admit that, you know, I don't think I could go back to a regular watch at this point. I mean, there's a lot of things I don't like about it. I mean, I don't like the way that the complex, what do they call them? Complexions or whatever. The center one, you don't have enough control. You can't do with the center one what you can do with all the rest of them. I don't like the fact that it's buzzing in the middle of the night. I don't, you know, there's a bunch of things I still think it's too slow when you turn up and you have to be at just the right angle. So there's this whole, like when you're laying down and you look over and you can't get your watch to turn on.
Wait, these all sound like real negatives. I hate to say it.
No, they are. But what I'm saying is
you're not selling me on the watch. If I'm sitting listening to this going, oh, I got to get that.
Sure, but I mean, it's not similar conversations to what we had when the iPhone came out and the iPad came out. And right before the Apple Watch came out.
I disagree. I thought the iPhone was a hit from day one. I knew it was flawed, but I saw its utility. I didn't think the watch, I don't think normal people are going to ever buy that thing.
I guess I'm going to say that what it does do and how it integrates, though, is even with all the things that I complain about around it, and I complain about a lot of things, but all the things that I complain about around it, I still wouldn't go back to a regular watch. I mean, I think that's for me, at least, my experience of it. I just love the fact that I don't have to pull out my phone every time it buzzes. I can just look down and say, oh, I don't want to pay attention to that, or I do, or whatever.
One of the things that we found interesting was I always thought it was going to be like an Apple TV because you had to have other Apple stuff in order to use it. But I mean, some expectations were like it was going to be the next iPhone, and there is that's just an impossible expectation
to reach.
But I do think it's performing. I think it has surprised some people. We're running a survey. It actually ends today on iMore about how people use their Apple Watch. It's not whether you have it or not, but if you have it, how much do you actually use all the different features? And it's about an 8 to 10 minute survey. And we've had about, I don't know, 6,000-7,000 people take it already. And it's super interesting to see how many people use it in how many ways. And while some people might find absolutely no use for it or might find it annoying, there is a large contingent of people within the confines of those who already have an iPhone 5 or more and actually want health features or notification features or whatnot, but they are getting considerable value out of it. And my interest is mostly, I agree with Andy, we're going to see watchOS 2 around the time of iOS 9. I'm wondering if they're going to do something else over the holidays, like if there's going to be new bands or something else that's going to further sort of create buzz around the product, because it's too soon for a new actual watch module, but it might not be too soon given their model to have red bands or new leather bands or new metal bands or something else to make the watch seem fresh again for the holidays.
I'm going to, well, as long as I'm pissing people off, I'm also going to say the iPad is history. No?
And the Mac. The Mac is done.
No, the Mac, thank God they still make it. I don't know how much longer
Leo, you jumped off the cliff. Why bother flapping your arms at this point? Go ahead.
I like the Mac. I think the Mac has some legs. Not enough to keep Apple afloat, but it has some legs. But I do think that it's interesting to see that the two most recent categories Apple has announced have. And that's the problem, is you do compare them to the iPhone, which is kind of unprecedented success, you know, historic success.
Even fossil fuel resources don't compete well with the iPhone.
Yeah, I know. Exxon not doing so well.
And I do think that there would be a surge. I strongly, you know, after the last show, I bought a Mac. I listened to Andy and
love that MacBook. Do you like it?
Yeah, I like it a lot. The only thing that I don't like is that I can't touch the screen, you know. Yeah. So, you know, and I think absolutely that right. You know, like, I don't need them to figure out how to touch the screen. Just let me touch it. Like with my Surface 3, I don't have any problem with just moving things around and touching as much. And then when I need to go back to a trackpad, I go back to it. It would be fine. So it's a little frustrating there. Outside of that, it's great. It's light. It's, you know.
What do you think of Force Touch? Does that ring your chimes?
On the trackpad, I thought it was kind of amazing. I mean,
really?
I still keep on touching
it. What do you
it,
do with
I
it?
Can't, like,
well, no, I can't. No. Force touch, not the fact that there's no moving force parts. Click. Force click.
Oh, the force touch, I'm not using. I'm not really.
Yeah,
using
I haven't found
right.
a use for that. Now, there was an interesting rumor that came out. Who was it? Was quoting people who use who are using the new iPhone with force touch.
Mark Gurman.
It was Mark Gurman, of course.
Yeah.
Who said that the people who are using it are finding wonderful, new, exciting ways to use it. It makes sense on the watch because you just have a dearth of controls. I haven't found a way to use it.
Look at the music app, Leo. Like, you have all those incessant more buttons, those
maybe
little
that's
ellipse
it. Yeah.
More buttons, and all this functionality is buried. And again, if you get angry, you just hit something, and then all this functionality pops up at you. And if it tracks your finger, and if it gives you stuff like pressure sensitivity without the need for a Wacom layer in between, then there's
It's not intuitive to me. I guess when you're drawing, it makes sense. But just in other contexts, it's not intuitive. Like, it gets in the way sometimes. I want to drag an icon in my dock around, and then I accidentally force touch, and now it's doing something else.
It's going to take a while to get used to it, but it is a way of putting things that aren't vital to your usage of an app, but would be nice to have much more conveniently than having to go to some submenu or some separate entire screen to access them.
Yeah.
One answer to that is that make it simpler so that you don't need to have that sort of interactivity. But I know I talked about this a lot last week and the week before, but I just think that Apple shouldn't mess with it unless they can present a consistent definition of what force touch means. I don't think they've done that on either the trackpad or the watch yet.
One thing Apple
it's like saying, imagine that there's a gesture that is like this. You know, imagine like that with the watch and with the phone. I said, well, occasionally, if you do this, then this other interface comes up. Like, okay, why would
shake
I want
to
try to do that?
Well, actually, we're starting to get those. There's the shake interface, right? And then there's some Android device like this Android device, the Moto G. If you go like this, you take a picture.
Well, remember shake to shuffle in music, and every time you danced, you change the song you were dancing to?
People have tried stuff like that. Yeah, it doesn't work with dancing, I guess.
Yeah, we need to think that one through a bit.
One thing Apple has changed is their website. Big change to the website. The store is gone. But Apple,
or, and it's both. It's you know,
it's gone and it's everywhere.
It's gone Obi-Wan. You know, if you strike me down now, I more powerful than you possibly.
But
imagine.
What do they take it's down everywhere. Now before an event? Like, does a whole site come down now for 2 hours before an event? Well, this is very confusing.
I think
to
the
me.
Point is now is it? Yeah, it is kind of interesting.
You're right. I never even thought of that because traditionally the store says we're closed. Come back in a minute when we have a new product. But now the store is, as you say, fully integrated into the site. So, and this makes sense.
It may make it easier. It may make it easier because you don't have to turn it, you know, but this may be a much bigger engineering project where now they don't have to necessarily.
Now they just take away the buy button, right?
There's no web object URLs if you look through there.
Oh, really? They finally abandoned it? That's really
good. I don't know, but I don't see any.
Oh, that would be nice. I feel so bad for the Apple website guys who had to use web objects long after everybody had abandoned it. So the buy button is the change now. So you go to any product as one would to do research, and instead of then going to the store to buy, you can buy right there. In fact, here we are already in a buy interface just by clicking the iPad. So I guess it makes sense. It was a little one thing was hard for me to do, and maybe that's an unusual thing. But people often ask me, "What's the difference between, let's say, a MacBook Air and a MacBook Pro?" And it used to be you'd go to the store, and it was a lot easier to look at the specs and the numbers. Now you have to kind of go to different sections of the website to see them. There is a compare button, so I guess you can eventually get a comparison going, right?
I have to admit, my favorite aspect of this is on the mobile version, there's a hamburger without a patty. And if you click on it, it spins around and turns into an animated X and then spins back and goes out of the way.
What's a hamburger? You mean a two-line hamburger?
Yeah, two-line hamburger. Some people have called it a falafel. I mean, I don't know what it's supposed to represent, but it's really nicely animated.
It's a taco. Everybody knows it's a taco.
A taco.
It's perfect. A taco button. The taco button.
Quesadilla.
So this is, you know, it's funny. I don't think it's widely noted, but somebody who's been lately paying attention to web design because of our own redesign, I find this fascinating that they just eliminated the store. Mm-hmm. It's just there. It's a good move.
I think by definition has to be a good move because you have to imagine exactly how much playtesting Apple did,
right.
And how much sensors they had wired up into the site. God knows how long they've been running this version of the standard Apple Store site that was wired up to simply watch how do people move through our site and what moves end with them purchasing something.
They have the metrics. You're right. Yeah,
they have the metrics, and it's again ABC. Always be closing. Never put the buy button more than more than four neuron jumps away from the Skinner box reaction.
And to answer your hypothetical, Renee, I guess if you just, you know, here I am on the 5K iMac, and all you do is just hit that buy button, just goes away. I mean,
so much less dramatic, though, Leo.
I know. You lose some of the event feeling of it, right? It's going
to
be
new.
The
best thing about this to me is that because we've been talking about iTunes and things like that for several shows, and Apple.com is an incredibly popular site and it had a back end powered by what might not be considered current web technology. And then all of a sudden, like a snap of their fingers, they changed it. And they were probably working on it behind the scenes for a very long time. And it has to make you hope that they're working on something similar for the iTunes store, because that's a huge sort of technical debt that they're carrying behind them. And one of the reasons why iTunes is the way it is. And if they're doing a similar restructuring there, maybe at some point we'll come there and we'll see something new and wonderful at one of these events that they've been building behind the scenes for a couple of years.
Have you assigned a iMore reporter to look at the source code behind the page and figure out what it is they're doing now?
They're just using what looks like really smart implementations of modern web standards.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And it is one of the most popular sites on the web. So like Andy said, you don't change those lightly.
Yeah. It's kind of beautiful if you as an example, go to the 5K and, the 5K IMAX page. And then as you scroll, you figure, I've got to scroll down, right? And as you scroll down, look what happens. Instead of scrolling down, the giant image you're looking at recedes into an iMac and then it scrolls down. That's
it's
kind
beautiful
of...
unless it's your job to cover Apple and you've got to look at it over and over and over again. And it takes you 3 seconds.
Are you sick of it?
No, I mean, I understand that it's not built for me, so I can perspective take on it. But it is beautiful. It just takes a while.
I think you nailed it. Always be selling. That's exactly what it is, Andy. This is everything here is a pitch for the product.
And it's quite a mix of both simplicity and complexity. I mean, I just find that going through it, you don't feel like you have a lot of stuff being thrown at you, but they are packing a lot of options and everything else into it. It's you know, they, like everything else, I mean, it's a good lesson in how to think through things visually.
They must have been testing this for years. I mean, this is, geez Louise.
But also notice that even the stuff that's important, I mean, this is just terrific design. The stuff that's important is also, they still have that deck of buttons up at the top so that I don't want the beautiful sales brochure presentation. I just want to see a table that tells me how much RAM is in this thing. You can still scroll up and you'll, tech specs is still at the top deck.
Oh, they're doing that taco thing here too, Renee. When you click the grid, the X rotates and then, ooh.
It's got very smooth animation and very consistently smooth across the web.
You know what, that tells me they're preloading hundreds of megabytes of stuff behind the scenes.
They used to do that for the animations on an older version where they would do JPEG slicing before, like web animation.
Right, remember that? Yeah. Now, okay, little nitpick. Sometimes the button says buy, sometimes it says buy now.
They're A/B testing.
You think?
I don't know.
You're right. If do they sell more when it says buy now? Good. We'll say buy now from now on. Let's take a break. We'll come back with more. I'll take it back. I love the watch and the iPad. They're going to be big, big sellers. I'm so sorry.
That's going to be the
I was just cranky.
Well, we'll see. We'll ask you again like a day after, a week before the event to see, after the invites go out, to see if.
I know. I always get excited at the event. Actually, you know what happened on the MacBook event? What was the line that Phil Schiller used? Something about lust? Hashtag? Yeah,
hashtag MacLust.
MacLust. I had it. And then cooler heads prevailed, and I didn't buy it. I thought, no. And then I saw a lot of people with them, and I fell in love with it all over again. So I had to buy it, and now I'm very happy. Is your review positive, Andy?
Of the new MacBook? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. The basic take is that a lot of stuff you've heard me talk about over the past month here, that I do think it's the most advanced, the most exciting Mac Apple has done in years. It would certainly, without question, one of the three landmark designs they've done, might even be the most significant since the iMac. Not definitely not for everybody. It'll be a more egalitarian design next year, I think. But this is not a failure by any means. This is definitely building something today that is the platform for future Macs tomorrow. Really exciting.
Not perfect, but really impressive.
Not perfect for everybody. Again, there are a lot of. I keep coming back to Douglas Adams, what he used to say about the Concorde, where when the supersonic cross Atlantic flights, which were really only about an hour shorter than conventional jets, but they cost like $10,000 more. So as he said, that extra hour has to be incredibly important to all of the people inside that plane. And so when you say there are a lot of people for whom I don't care that the keyboard is a little bit flatter, if it means that I get to have a real MacBook that's the size of an iPad. So,
yeah, maybe that's one reason I use the iPad so much less than I used to. I kind of like having a real keyboard.
It's not that have you tried iOS 9 yet on the iPad Air 2?
No.
Yeah. No. I mean, I've also been using Windows 10 for the past couple of weeks a lot more than I use Windows normally, and it really makes me itch for the ability in iOS 9 to put two apps side by side and be able to switch between apps with a mechanical keyboard really, really easily. And I think that above and beyond making it a larger device, above and beyond having a different silicon in there, I think it's just that Apple has done. If Apple just does that one thing, I think they could have done a couple of years ago, without a lot of trouble. A lot of people would have been not quite so enamored of MacBook Airs when they have iPads that can do 90% of what they want to do just as easily.
One of the other things, rumors are strong, Apple will be announcing in less than a month.
Leo, were you going to go do a commercial?
I was.
Okay, sorry. Didn't know.
This is called the tease.
Got it. Sorry. I didn't know if I should take responsibility for distracting you, and then you forgot to make money.
No. I will not forget that,
that
part.
That is not possible.
Can I just add that the iOS 9 stuff is like a brontosaurus
has that secondary brain somewhere.
Oh no, that's an itch I've got to scratch. Go ahead, Renee.
I was going to just say that I've been spending the last 3 days deep diving on multi-app multitasking on iOS 9. I've got it running on the iPad Air 2, but I've also been going over how it's implemented. I should have a piece up on that in a couple of days, but it's really, really smart. And it's got me just using the iPad Air 2 all the time. It's amazing how big a difference it makes.
We shall see. Yep. We shall see. Apple TV is also going to be announced. We'll talk a little bit about that. We've talked about that for the last few weeks. We'll see if there's anything new to say. But first, a word from Wealthfront. A very clever solution to a very real problem. If you're saving, and saving is, I hope, a big part of your financial plan, whether it's for retirement or buying that house or, you know, rainy day fund. The issue is, how do you invest the money? Now, you know, I mean, do you just put it in a savings account and hope that 0.25% is gonna grow? Yeah. Or do you go to an investment advisor where he takes 1-3% of what you've got under management and fees for transactions and changes and your money goes backwards? Or do you try to do it yourself and then forget to pay attention and all of a sudden you're losing money? Here's a better way. Wealthfront. It makes it easy for anyone to access world-class long-term investment management. You could start today for $500. That's the minimum. But actually, you can get an account at wealthfront.com/MacBreak and see what portfolio they would be recommending for you. You answer a few questions about your time frame, your risk aversion. Now, it's one of the reasons you save money. By the way, the cost, instead of 1-3% a year, is 0.25% a year with no commissions and no hidden fees. That's it. And the reason they can do that is because they're using programmatic trading that's very sophisticated. In fact, will make you more money because they do things that humans aren't good at, like tax loss harvesting and direct indexing. So they're going to optimize your returns, lower your tax bill, ultimately improve your savings. It's all based on, by the way, don't go right past those books because it's all based on a couple of books. One that I read some years ago that was totally inspiring, A Random Walk Down Wall Street and Winning the Loser's Game. These are books that talk about how to actually beat the market. And the software is based on these concepts. Very sophisticated. And it's very successful. They've grown 20 times in the past 2 years. They now have over $2.4 billion in assets they're managing. And you can try it right now, wealthfront.com/MacBreak. You'll get a free personalized investment portfolio. That's the first step in your due diligence. See what allocations they recommend for your needs. And then if you decide to invest, and again, the minimum, $500, Wealthfront will manage the first $15,000 entirely free of charge forever. That's nice. Not even 0.25%, but 0% of your first $15,000 free of charge. Claim your offer today, wealthfront.com/MacBreak. For compliance purposes, I have to tell you, Wealthfront Incorporated is an SEC-registered investment advisor. Brokerage services are offered through Wealthfront Brokerage Corporation, member FINRA and SIPC. This is not a solicitation to buy or sell securities. Investing in securities involves risks, and there is the possibility of losing money. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Please visit Wealthfront.com to read their full disclosure. Wealthfront.com/MacBreak. Renee Ritchie is here from iMore.com, from Kilgali and Pixel Core in beautiful downtown Rwanda. Alex Lindsay, is it hot?
It's warm, but not any. It's not any warmer than
fan, but it's not on. So
no, yeah, it's not. It's not.
What time is it?
It's winter, isn't it?
It is 9 o'clock.
Nine p.m.
Really late
on a winter's eve.
Hours. Yeah, it's. Yeah, but it's, you know, Kigali is kind of, there's dry season and there's wet season. There's not really summer, winter, right. You know, that type of thing. So the wet season's about to come. So it's kind of overcast and there's a nice little wind. So it's actually quite a nice week to visit.
And of course, Andy Anatko from the Chicago Sun-Times. Anything more to say about Apple TV? I think we talked about it last week I get the impression, and I gather you guys do too, that Apple just finally said, oh, forget it. We're just going to put the hardware out.
Ship it.
Ship it. Great artist ship.
Well, I think it's going to be interesting. I think that I'm really interested to see if they're going to open up. I mean, I think that we think we're going to get apps. You know, I think that that's really going to open up it's a whole new market. I mean, really. I mean, I think that, you know, to be able to develop for the iPad, for the Apple TV, when you have all these phones that become controllers for games and, you know, a chip that's powerful enough to do it, I think that beyond the content, even if they haven't gotten the content deals yet, that they could get a lot of interest there.
Yeah, maybe if you have the hardware in place, then it's easier to make the deals. Or maybe it's less scary again, when they can say, well, you know, we only sold 100,000. What are you worried about? That was the iTunes, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What? Just the little Mac. Nobody.
Only the nerds.
Nobody's going to care about that.
I mean, again, I mean, the Apple could, anytime they wanted to, could start going to David Fincher. They could go to these other guys and say, hey, let us give you $50 million. Let us give you $100 million to make a movie.
Done that? That's what Netflix has done, and Amazon has done, and so many companies are doing their own content now. Why hasn't Apple done that?
You want a video version of Beats One, Leo?
No. Well, actually, that Julie Antonuga sounds pretty hot. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, a streaming video channel.
Yeah, actually, that's an interesting idea. Who would ever add video to audio programming? That's nuts. Oh, I'm sorry. Never mind.
Well, I think that with all of these things, there's a little bit of Apple. I think there has to be a concern at the size that they are of any kind of antitrust. They could do a lot of these things.
But Amazon's huge and Amazon's making content. Yeah,
they're the largest. You know, it's one thing to be huge. It's another thing to be the largest company, largest publicly traded company in the United States.
That's an interesting liability, isn't it? Maybe that's why Google, split itself into
ABC.
ABC. Do, re, mi, XYZ. Because to avoid that kind of scrutiny.
It might be the scrutiny. I think that it's also to allow these other ones to thrive on their own and not have everyone complaining that they're being distracted. But I think Apple has some antitrust issues, possibly. I mean, that could be a concern. I think that they've culturally really felt like they should be working with the industry that's already there. That's what they've always done. And I think Steve was that was his real focus. But I think that, again, it would be noise for them to spend $100 million a week on a new movie that was only released on iTunes.
Yeah.
You know, like it was only, you know, that was a great movie that is never, you're never going to see it any place other than iTunes. I think that, that wouldn't be hard. They could find great directors that have not been able to be as creative as they like or whatever. You're not walking away from Hollywood. You're just walking away from the system, the distribution partners.
There's other directions they could go at. Go ahead, Andy.
Not only that, but I think that it's significant that Amazon does well with this. Amazon does well with this, and Netflix does well with this because they are absolutely flat, generic corporations without a single point of view creatively on their own. Whereas Apple is nothing but expressing their point of view in all the products that they ship. So I think that if they were to start to produce their own content, they couldn't do so without in some way saying we endorse this approach to this material or we endorse this topic or we endorse this creator, which would so handcuff them in ways that their competitors don't have that I don't think it would be successful. But I think more important than that, I just think they're just not interested in getting in that business. Do you want to have a meeting with Adam? Do you want to start making Happy Gilmore movies? Do you want to take that meeting? Do you want to say, fine, you're a cobbler who makes magical shoes. Fine, you're doing a racist old West parody.
The obvious one still, I think, is it probably will never happen, but is to just buy Disney and let Disney continue to be Disney. But buy Disney and then experiment with their content. I mean, it is the perfect platform for the kind of stuff Apple, when it comes to everything from Marvel to Star Wars to, all these other things. It's just a great, platform for Apple, and I think that, and they could buy it with cash.
You own 85% of my childhood now, Alex. Star Wars and Disney and the Muppets and Marvel.
No, it was something, it took me a little while to realize.
Your childhood was for sale.
What would that do? What would that deal do to creators? I mean, would you, let's say that you are a filmmaker, either a huge filmmaker or just someone with a point of view. Would you be happy saying that, congratulations, we've bought your movie and it will be only available to really expensive high-end luxury devices?
What I'm saying is that Apple wouldn't need to do that. If Apple just bought Disney and then just said, we're just going to distribute Disney stuff, it wouldn't, without the exclusive, without all that work, Apple could, just start using the Disney assets as a Disney, let Disney continue to do what it does. Let Pixar continue to do what it does. Let all of that continue to go down the path so that Apple doesn't have to deal with their branding issues against it. It's just Disney. But then at the same time, you know, do aggressive things where you're doing better extras on iTunes and you're doing, more integration, you know, with the products and the movies. And there's lots of that, you know, and the it's so big. I mean, that property is so big that, you know, Apple could chew on that for quite some time and put a lot of pressure on the other entertainment, you know, because they can turn it into money in places that a lot of the traditional distributors can't.
Google would have to buy Fox and Microsoft would have to buy Universal and be glorious.
But I think you're right also about regulatory approval might be an issue.
Yeah, it could be very difficult. I think I personally think that's the number one reason they haven't bought one of these entertainment industries is why they're not doing their own content is that it's just, I think that it puts them in a position that I'm sure there's some concern there.
Yeah,
I
mean, the precedent for that goes in the other direction. It's when the movie studios owned motion picture theaters, movie theaters. Yeah. And in fact, that's how it all worked for years in the, 20s and 30s was they'd make a movie and then send it to their house theaters. And that's, I think, would be similar that Apple would be in the reverse as the big, Apple's the theater. If they bought a movie company, that'd be an issue. On the other hand, the Apple TV could really jumpstart their HomeKit stuff, right? Don't they need to do that?
They don't. With iOS 9, they've actually moved it to iCloud. So as long as you have an iCloud account, you can do everything you used to have an Apple TV for. But what Apple TV could do is the same thing that the Apple Watch does, is that sort of make it better. So you could have, for example, a very Amazon Echo-style Siri presence in your living room with the Apple TV. So you could, without having to go to your watch or your phone, if it's just not convenient or not with you, you could just say, you know, yo, Siri, game mode, and then all the lights would change and the music would come up and the video game would start, and that adds extra value to it.
We're seeing Microsoft add Cortana capabilities to Xbox. They've announced that. Should the Apple TV respond to voice?
Yeah.
For some reason, I think...
Go ahead, Eddie.
Quickly, it's a huge thing. Once you simply can just raise your head, make a request, get information, and get information back or do stuff, you realize that if I could have Amazon Echo in every single room, I would like to have Echo in every room. If I could have a $99 box made by Apple that even I would just use it in a headless fashion, just making sure there is one in almost every room where I tend to hang out, if it just had that feature, I would definitely buy three or four of them. It's like multi-touch. It really is.
Well, it's
is.
Like the Echo, right? I mean, I would put the Echo in every room if I could.
And it'd be an Echo that's sold internationally.
Oh, sorry. Bad news.
It's like Renee is always there with a little auger drill. Every time there's a boat floating about a feature that someone else has, let's drill the "oh, it's not available in Canada."
Hold the rain cloud over my head.
It's an advantage to Apple. Google's doing a great job of this now, and so is Microsoft. But it's an advantage when you can provide the similar services to people in a wide variety of countries. It becomes more valuable to everybody.
And it's a bigger challenge too. I can't imagine how difficult it would be to internationalize a voice system like that. I mean, it's almost like Amazon is one of the few companies that has the license to do that because they don't have the ability to even manufacture and distribute on an international scale hardware like that. They can simply say, let's start with English. Even Google, I think right now, I've seen, remember last week or something, they had some sort of piece of news about, for their Translate app. You know, the visual translation app where they're promising that they're very proud of like the half dozen to dozen languages that they have. They are apologetic that they don't have every single language on the planet, and they intend and hope to get there. But that's part of the responsibility of doing an app like that.
We get a ton of complaints from people who are bi or trilingual that things like Siri just don't automatically know what language they're speaking when they change languages mid-sentence. And you talk to people like who are allowed to talk about this stuff, and they try to explain how really hard it is for them to do one language and not
people
even
are complaining they can't speak to Siri in three different languages at the same time.
I mean, you just want it to work the way you want it to work, Leo. I mean, some people would like to say Siri switch to French or Siri switch to Italian and then say Siri switch back. I mean, like, there's different levels of what they want from this.
Why that would be hard to do.
Yeah. God, you get mad enough when you roll over on your TV remote and suddenly all the titles are all the menus are in Spanish. Imagine Siri, yo requesto que Por favor, and Inglés.
Well, it happens mostly like with Apple Music, if they want to say play music, but the title of the music is in a different language. Like it happens if you're in Spanish and you're asking it to play an American song, you're using please play in Spanish and the name of the title in American, and it doesn't always seem to work the way they want it to.
Okay. That would be useful for learning languages. Just change the language of your TV and make your kids learn Spanish. Really incense them.
That's the kind of problem that companies like Nuance and Apple and Google are all trying to solve.
I know. Big problems. Yeah. It's very interesting. Speaking of government intervention, the EU, European Union, has decided, no, Apple's actually, they're not colluding with the music labels to kill free music. Sorry. Never mind. Move on. Now, isn't a similar investigation going on in the U.S.?
Yeah, the attorneys general are all over it.
Yeah. So presumably, I don't know how much the FTC pays attention to the EU or the EC, but maybe a little bit.
Well, I think that Apple, you know, it's not colluding for Apple to go public and say, you know, people should be paying for the music. It'd
be going behind the scenes and pressuring them, which they were rumored to be doing.
Yeah,
they were rumored to be going to the labels saying, you know, it's not in your interest and it's certainly not in our interest that Spotify be allowed to give away music for free. What do you think? But apparently the EU said that didn't happen.
I guess it should have gone to Taylor Swift.
Now that's collusion. Now that's pressure. That's peer pressure.
I believe she is EU regulated. Yes.
Apparently the EU did talk to Sony and UMG and Warner Music and say, hey, did anything happen? And they said no. So they said, okay, never mind.
Did they talk to Taylor Swift, I think is the real question. And when will Taylor Swift enter the, you know, the presidential race, I think is the real question. A lot of us.
You know, at this point, I think she'd get the vote.
She'd win.
Well, I'd love to see her and Donald Trump debate.
Jeez Louise.
That would be just the two of them.
How long, though, before, actually he's completely off topic, but how long before the president really becomes the person who has the most active Twitter following?
How long before Cortana wins, Leo?
Or Cortana.
Yeah.
No, but I think, you know, Donald Trump's showing the power of television. If you're a TV star, you can beat almost anybody in the polls just because of face recognition.
Not just face recognition. We know exactly what he stands for. He's an ass. That's his brand. We know it's the ass
but
brand.
But he'd be such a good ass president.
No, exactly. So like when you have like 10 people like, hi, I'm a white guy in a dark suit and a tie. Hi, I'm also a white guy in a dark suit and a tie.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm a woman in a dark suit and a sort of a tie-ish sort of thing.
I have a comb over and you're stupid.
Right.
I'm interested.
Even Obama, I recall, didn't really break out until he had that one great, here's an opportunity. There were the opposition party is trying to paint me as someone whose preacher is a radical black violent person who preaches race hate. I am now going to slap that down completely by making the statement on race in America that I knew that at some point during this campaign I was going to make, and that's when everybody got a chance to hear him be presidential and be the sort of person you want in charge, commanding troops and in charge when there's a hurricane coming and in charge when, you know, you just suddenly lost your job or something. It's you define people by their moments. And Trump is defined by, again, the moments where he is an ass, which means that he is a known quantity and people are going to listen to him. But once that other person, once the other Republican candidate comes out and simply says, here is why I'm relevant for this generation. Here's why I'm even a better choice for Democrats.
But that's why Taylor Swift should run.
Taylor Swift should tell us Secretary of State Donald Trump Jr.
Yeah. I'm just so amused by this. I can't tell you. I mean, it should be we're far enough before the election that I can afford to be silly about this.
Yeah.
I'm so enjoying this ongoing reality show train wreck, knowing that at some point, inevitably, he's going to either double down and double down on his springtime for Hitler strategy. I really think his strategy is I just got to keep making it a more and more ridiculous campaign until I'm forced out because I'm not allowed to quit. That's not my brand. I have to be able to say that I'm being forced out.
Could it be like nuclear war where you finally go to pull the thing on the election night and you just can't do it? Like you're all set to vote for Trump and then you're about to pull it and the whole thing flashes in front of your head and you go, nah, and pull any other level you can?
How about? I think that the Hillary's best chances are to have her name legally changed to anybody but Trump. she suddenly becomes the front reader in every single poll.
Who's the? I think you have Doug Ford, don't you? There in Canada.
We have our elections are funny because they can call them between any specified period.
Anytime
of time.
They want.
Don't last very long. Yeah. Well, I think it's between 3 and 5 years.
And campaigns are short, that. Right? They're weeks.
Yeah, like a couple. Yeah, it's like a couple months at most. We had our debates the same night as yours. No one in the world knew that we were having debates. Yeah. And then we just vote. And you can't vote for the person who's having the debate anyway, because the person who's running the party,
Rob
you
Ford.
Vote for your local MP and they become right. The prime. I mean,
Rob Ford, who I was trying to think of. Not
Rob Ford.
Rob Ford. Yeah.
In you guys like the Super Bowl. Every few years, you just have these two parties run at each other as fast as they can, and everyone just drinks a lot and has fun.
In the UK, isn't it true that they actually that the candidates are legally required not to spend more than X pounds on their entire campaign?
It's amazing. Like, we have a non-elected Senate, and because we can't agree on how to change it, they're just not appointing senators. So the Senate just keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
After 6 weeks after unveiling Apple Music, Eddie Q says, it's doing very well. Thank you very much. 11 million trial members. For some reason, they're giving out the number that 2 million are buying the family plan or have already bought the family plan. Can you clarify this for me, Renee? I'm sure you understand.
Yeah, this. So when you sign up, you're initially signing up for a free 3 months trial for the single user, but you can go into the account settings and change it.
So nobody's paying yet. You can't pay even if you wanted to.
But the nice thing about the family thing is you can either use it for 6 of your own devices or you can spread it out among 6 family members. So it just means that people are choosing to do that.
Oh, that's interesting.
You can have it on as many devices as you want, simultaneously playing it on up to 6 devices.
So right now, I can only play it at any one time on one device.
Theoretically.
But if I got the family plan, I could listen on, I don't know why I'd want to, but I could listen on 6 devices.
Yeah, and spread them amongst 6 people on a family sharing account if you have that set up.
Well, given that when they bought Beats Music, it had 110,000 subscribers. This is good. This is 10 times bigger, but... Of course, it's still the trial period, and it's a lot easier just to say, "Yeah, I'll take it for free for 3 months."
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the big thing will be when they get to the end of that trial period, what those numbers actually end up to be. But I bet they're going to be 5 or 6 million minimum.
I think if you've got 11 million in the trial, at least half of them are going to forget to turn it off
until the bill comes.
I think even then, I think it's that default thing, right? Well, what the hell? All right, I'll keep it.
It's only $10.
It's only $10. What the hell? I swear, if you can get 11 million people to try something, I would love to know what that number is. Phil Leiben, who is the former CEO of Evernote, told me that the freemium model for them, and I think they were fairly consistent across a lot of different apps, is that you'd get about something between 2, 3, 4, 5, at best 5%. Of the free users would end up going premium. But I bet Apple does better than that.
Mm. Well, also you got them in the showroom, and that's like within steps of the cash register. I mean, I wound up signing up for Evernote premium, not because I made a shrewd and long-standing evaluation with flip charts and stuff about the values I'm getting out of my Evernote, but simply it was almost an impulse thing where they did a pop-up when I was in some app or on the web saying, well, here's what you can do if you – not even an ad, just like here's a feature that you're not using, you could be using if you're using premium. And I actually thought about it for 30 or 40 seconds and realized that I'm relying so much on Evernote now that I feel like I need to pay for it just to be a good person.
That's exactly why I bought it. I didn't need the premium features.
Same here.
I wanted to give them money.
Right. Whereas if they'd switched me off after 60 or 90 days – at some point, I'd say, okay, what else can I use? That's a note giver app.
Yeah, nobody's going to say, oh, I like Apple. I'm going to give Apple money. As much as we love Apple, I don't think people are going to say, let me give you $10 a month. I just like
on the contrast, there's no free, unlike Spotify and other things, there is no free tier. You basically give up the ability to play any song you want whenever you want. So it depends on how valuable that service is to you. So the conversion rates might be very different than a service like Evernote that has a completely usable app, even if you don't pay for it.
I think Apple has a number, like they need this many to make it. Successful. They probably have to prove something to the music industry, right?
They have to provide an audience. I mean, if they're not providing a dollar amount of purchases that people are going to be buying stuff month after month after month, because that number is going down, 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 no matter where you're buying from. They need to be able to tell these companies that here's the quantity of people we will deliver to you month after month after month. Not only that, but here's the quality of people we will deliver to you. People you're not going to be able to reach efficiently on your own. So I have no idea what those numbers are, but I'm absolutely certain it's more than a strict number of here's how many people have signed up for it, and here's how many people after 90 days are now paying for it.
There must be some pro forma that they have to give the record industry, both for the radio and for streaming. What?
They probably need a couple. They probably have a couple of years to mature that. So, you know, 2 or 3 years at least to mature that process. And I think they could get, they could probably get as big or bigger than Spotify in that period of time, maybe even in the first year. And so I think that at that point, you know, they're, and I think the Beats One thing is an interesting thing. I'm not that excited about it, but, you know, the radio thing.
Is everybody in Kilgally listening to Beats One?
No. Yeah, nobody is.
Because that was one of the ideas was, hey, everybody will be listening to the station at the same time all over the world. It'll be global. It'll bring us all together.
No, it doesn't have to be everyone. I mean, just a growing audience in that realm could end up being the largest radio audience that has ever existed. I mean, so it doesn't, you know, regardless
That's
of
true.
Whether everyone's listening to it, you know, if you get to a point where there are, you know, 30 million or 40 million people listening for some big event, and that's the big question is when do they get right band there for interview or the right whatever, where you have that, you know, lazy Sunday moment where it's just everyone is there and something happens and, you know, that kind of thing.
Apple has the right to do Beats 2, 3, 4, and 5, according to a leak of their agreements with the music industry.
Yep.
That'd be interesting. I mean, I see no reason to have one station. I think it'd be really interesting to have because right now, if you don't like the music that's playing, there's nowhere to go. It's like, you turn it off.
It's so remarkable how consistent Apple is. It's no joke that they train all of their executives on here's how Apple does things.
Right.
They behave so similarly. It's the music service is exact same way. Let's make one thing to be. We got big ambitions, but we're going to start with one station and we're going to get that sorted out. And then we're going to add more features, i.e. more stations and more audience as we go along. Once we figured out how Beats One works and learn our lessons to apply there. Same reasons why, you know, the iPhone didn't do very much to start with. And it took 2 or 3 years to become a real product, just like the Apple Watch, just like even the Mac. Really, it's just traditional that they start small and then grow out. It's companies like Yahoo where they really try to say, we are reinventing ourselves. We have dynamited every single building, and now we've rented a whole bunch of folding chairs and laptops for everybody to sit in the rubble and build something brand new in the rubble of what we've just destroyed. It's, no, let's tear down one building. No, actually, let's renovate one building. We'll get one of those press-in bathtub enclosures where they fix the bathroom in one afternoon, and then we'll grow out from there. We'll at least have a happens. Working toilet.
Beats One. It's as good as a working toilet.
It's our working toilet.
It's our working toilet.
Always on.
Can you get it in Canada?
Yes. I thought you meant the radio
in North Korea. You can't turn them off. If you try, you'll be arrested.
unlike the Apple Music,
it's all international. The original Beats service was U.S. only, which is why it had very small numbers.
Yeah. That would give you 10 times the numbers right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. And I think, like Alex said, it's sort of modeled on the British system, which is much more energizing and engaging and something a lot of North American audiences haven't heard in a long time.
Well, let me tell you, Sir Elton John has a show on Beats One, and he performed on Sunday night at the Outside Lands concert in San Francisco, the big festival. My son, who is 21, will be 21 in a week, was there and tells me. And so I said, well, who was your favorite act? And I thought he's going to say, you know, I don't know.
Imagine Dragons.
Yeah. You know what? It's so funny that you should say that because that's who I thought he might say. He likes maybe Steve Aoki. He likes the EDM. Elton John. He said Elton John, far and away the best concert.
Sir Elton John. Performer, Leo.
Huh? He's a performer. Exactly.
You learn a few things by doing nothing but touring and touring and touring year after year. I'd actually like to see Billy Joel as well because if this person does like this many dates for this many years, you imagine that show is tight at this point.
Yeah.
Well, there's also something, and I kind of made a hobby of going and watching the old performers, the most seasoned performers for years. In fact, they used to perform at the Venetian Room at the Fairmont Hotel in San Francisco. And every 2 weeks, it'd be Tony Bennett and Carol Channing, and I used to go and I would watch not so much for the entertainment or the music, but to watch somebody who's performed for live audiences for 50 years. Because there's a way they can perform. There's a rapport they have with the audience that's learned over many, many years. It's really interesting to watch. And everyone's unique. I understand Billy Joel is playing the Madison Square Garden every Tuesday now. So,
and doesn't he like normally sell it out?
Yeah. He's played there like 100 times.
He hasn't had a new record in years. It's like at some point, these performers, Jay Leno has spoken about this, how he notices that his crowds are getting smaller, but he'd much rather sell out a 2,000 seat theater than sell 5,000 tickets in a 7,000 seat theater. But he's still selling things out. What is he doing? What does he know?
How big is Madison Square Garden?
Man is a nice song.
But yeah, there must be a show there. You're right. Look, this is Billy Joel at the Garden. He by the way, he's like a franchise. He's like the Knicks. He actually just kind of like, he said, rent, this is how many performances this year at the Garden.
He's an institution.
He's an institution. He's a great man. He is now the longest run of any artist, 12 sold out shows at Madison Square Garden. It's his 59th show there.
Good heavens. I'm this is not sarcastic. I am so in awe of that. How do you sell out this huge venue? And again, you don't have a hit sitcom. You don't keep making albums. It's like this is why I say.
But your catalog
of songs has to be so strong, and the show you put together to perform them has to be so good that that's quality.
And there's got to be massive repeat, right? People go back again and again.
Yeah,
you saw him in January. See him in February.
Well, but it's also that I think part of it is that the location of Madison Square Gardens, the fact that New York is a huge tourist area, is there's a lot of, hey, we can go, and while we're there, you know, it's like going to the Broadway. If you don't like Broadway, you go see Billy
Joel. There's
a
Billy Joel show. So. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's I saw him in Buffalo, New York.
Oh, you've seen him? Maybe.
Oh, yeah. I saw him in 1991, I think, in Buffalo. And when I was working for Sony, actually. So, he's amazing. I mean, he really is.
So there you
amazing
go. He's live. Like the Bruce Springsteen of easy listening.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's a rocking show. And you think, like, how can he be entertaining sitting behind a piano? I mean, like, you know, like, but he gets up and even then he it's an incredible amount of energy. So
he is still at least a decade away from his PBS Pledge Drive special. That's what we're saying. Hey, remember the sounds of the 80s with the tail fins on the cars?
Well, and the thing is you haven't listened to him on the radio for a long time, but when he does a concert, he doesn't, there's no back tracks. I mean, there's just, you know, he fills 2 hours.
The band is actually playing. So, yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's also like there's no tracks. I mean, what I mean by that is that there's no deep album tracks that you're wondering about.
No, it's all hits all the time.
It is one hit after another that you know every word to for every song, and it does make it in. And so the whole crowd's into it. They all know it. They really enjoy it. I went to one where he was actually still had a new album. You know, so it was,
well, that's how long ago that was.
Yes, exactly.
And kids, he did it with. Without any sex tapes released, any nude butt photos, he did it on
all
talent.
Those people killed.
No,
that's how big he is.
That's really interesting. I actually saw Scooter X is putting the results. How much money he's made? I don't have it. How much money has he made in these tours, Scooter X?
Well, when you look at the revenue related to tours versus albums, he doesn't need to release another album. I mean, it's like, you know,
in fact, this is what the kids are doing now, right? They don't make money on recordings. They make money on performance.
Foo Fighters was at Fenway Park. And it's like they, well, for one thing, it was good to see Fenway Park being used to some sort of productive purpose this summer and spring. Let's just say that. Bostonian. But also it's like, it's really, really clear that this is what they do for a living. They are a live performance band. And yes, they do other projects. Yes, they have records, but it's like, it's not just something where they load up the vans and they just trundle through a bunch of dates. This is where their creativity is now in live performance. And so many bands are like that now.
I really like
And you can
that.
See that it shifted. It shifted from when you were paying $15 a ticket when I was a kid, because this was PR for the album. The album was what made money, and you just wanted to cover the costs of the concert. And when they shifted to the $100, $200, $300, $500 tickets is when, you know, it became the concerts became more important.
You want to know what the average ticket price at a Madison Square Garden Billy Joel concert is? The average is $235 per person.
But it's like going to Broadway. It really is. It's like, you know, we're going to go have a good time, and then we're going to go see a Billy Joel concert, which would be very enjoyable. I'm tempted now.
That's even the same thing as what's happening on Broadway now, where last time I came close to seeing I used to see Broadway shows all the time. That's when the ticket prices were about $75 to $90, and you get half-price tickets at the tickets booth in Times Square for half that, for like, you know, $35. And for $35 to $40, I will take a chance on stuff that I haven't seen before. I would search online, look at the playbill, say, I like that actor, I like that actor. Ooh, I like that actor's experience. I've never heard of this play before, but I will go see it. Last time I went, I think it was The Man Who Came to Dinner, you can't take it with you, which I've never seen live and I've always wanted to see live. And it was the cheap tickets were $120. And that was for a play that I had heard of and I wanted to go see. This is why you can't be upset that now you've got, you know, Minions, the Broadway musical, because you have, for $230 a ticket, for $175 a ticket, you have to be giving them something where I'm familiar with it. I know I'm going to like it, because for Billy Joel concert, I can't spend $230 on this ticket unless I am really certain I'm going to love this.
But he is the McDonald's of music. You know exactly what you're going to get.
Oh no! Well, imagine McDonald's where everything was fresh to order and amazing. Okay. And just,
I don't mean to deprecate Billy Joel. I like his music.
Exactly.
I like him better than the Apple Watch anyway.
What we're all saying is that if you are listening, Billy Joel or Billy Joel's people, and you want to cop us in, I'm gonna be in New York next month with some time to kill.
Just get right off the train at Penn Station, and there you are.
Here you go.
Apple Music,
you
play me Billy Joel.
You could get down there from Montreal in about 5 hours.
Yeah,
you'd be right there, depending on the condition of the tracks. Our show today brought to you by Braintree. Are you a mobile developer? Oh, you know that one of the keys to success for a mobile app is a good, strong payments back end. Do not write it yourself. There's so many reasons. I shouldn't even have to go into it. The security issues, the reliability issues, even customer perception. You know, there's about a 70% rejection rate, mobile cart abandonment, they call it. And I think a lot of that comes from people just not having the confidence to press the pay button. Braintree solves all that. That's why Uber uses Braintree. Uber, after all, it's all about the payment. It's all about how easy it is. Airbnb uses Braintree. Hotel Tonight, Living Social, Munchery. We talked to the CTO of Braintree, Juan Benitez, about how much developers like using Braintree. Take a listen.
You know, when we talk to iOS engineers, they get really excited by how fast and easy it is to have Apple Pay through Braintree. Just a ton of feedback from Android developers saying, wow, great, now I can get Android Pay. Then you see people really kind of responding and saying, wow, I can do more than one of these through one integration, one SDK, and one report too. Wow, that's going to make my finance guys happy.
It's going to make you happy right now if you go to BraintreePayments.com/MacBreak. They've got a sandbox you can try out, see how it would work for you. It's a full-stack payment solution. It supports all the payment types your customers will want, including, of course, credit cards, PayPal, Apple Pay, Bitcoin, Venmo, all with a single 10-line bit of code across all platforms. Superior fraud protection, customer service, fast payouts. And right now, if you sign up today at BraintreePayments.com/MacBreak, you'll get your first $50,000 in transactions fee-free. That should make it easy to sell the boss. BraintreePayments.com/MacBreak. Your first $50,000 in transactions. Fee free. Little word of warning to those numbnuts who would go into Apple stores and bend the iPhone 6. You could hurt yourself with a new iPhone.
What's up, guys? Lou here, back with another video. And today...
Lou's loud. World exclusive. Lou's a loud man. This is Unbox Therapy.
From the upcoming iPhone 6S.
I guess they got a backplate.
Doesn't even exist.
Is this possible, Ray, that they actually have the iPhone 6S backplate?
I mean, they're manufacturing them in China now, and people have historically been able to get
they leak out
and show parts, yeah, before release. Whether it's a final version or not, it's hard to say, but it's not surprising.
We weren't we going to get Lou on?
The window's open right now. I think
we were he could not make it.
Lou couldn't do it, so I'm showing his video. Lou, this I'm doing something for you, my friend. He was so. I guess this is the Australian. What's his name? That gets these great.
Sonny Dixon.
Sonny Dixon. He DM'd me, my close personal friend, Sonny Dixon. He DM'd me.
Are now known associate and accomplice.
Known associate and accomplice, and said, hey, would you like to see the new backplate? So what do? They braced him?
Yeah, I mean, previously where it would bend was an area where they had a connection, and that connection became a fulcrum that you could bend around. And now I believe they've made it a little bit thicker, and they've changed the engineering slightly to make that less likely.
And Lou picked right up on that. There it is.
That's too bad. I bet Apple's going to get crap for this, and I hope they don't. Like, you see, there was a problem. I bet that even if this had not become a thing, even if that had been the response had been, okay, well, look, a few people had done things that are not typical for a phone. Apple would have learned from that. Just like in the first couple of weeks when they released a new device, they always capture interesting faults so they can learn from them and roll that into the next version of it. It was never a big deal, but I'm glad that Apple's trying to do whatever they want to do in order to make what they consider to be a better product.
Yeah.
And the metal phones bend. I mean, we had one of my friends, Ali Kazmula, she ran an iPhone repair shop for years, and she got bent iPhone 4Ss and bent iPhone 5s and 5Ss, and it's all, once you make it out of metal, the laws of physics dictate that you can bend it.
Right.
That's why it was so important that it was significant that so many people were having this problem in the first month. The question is, do lots of people come out of the woodwork and say, yes, I've been having this problem too? Or does it remain there is a fluke set of circumstances under which a phone that is a very personal, pocketable device you carry around everywhere gets a certain type of damage. And it just proved to be this wasn't like the antenna problem where everybody had the problem. This was this is a couple dozen people who have the problem.
I've had this in my pocket since every day since it launched, and it is still totally flat.
It doesn't.
Every day in my pocket, yeah.
But I have to say, I am impressed. I know we stretch this show out, but Lou's getting a good 6 minutes out of this with calipers and showing and the thing.
Well, he was certainly famous before this, but the bending phones thing was his major breakthrough.
He was the guy who bent them.
Yeah.
He's got very strong forearms. He's got opposable thumbs, and he's not afraid to
use them. He bends 9 or 10 iPhones a day to keep
it. It's just the evolution of entertainment. Now that almost nobody knows what a phone book is, if you want to do that strongman technique, you have to bend the thing that people actually use to look up phone numbers with.
And he's a good Canadian boy. I
mean, is he? Oh, good.
He's from Toronto, yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Well, Lou, there you go. There's your daily plug.
I've forgotten. Did we learn why that the Apple logo was a punch out in that piece? Was there a radio underneath it, or was it just a better way to insert the reflective area?
I think they make the logos out of stainless steel on this generation of designs. So it's a separate metal piece. Yeah,
they are doing some real
aluminum in the logo.
They're doing some real mojo getting the signal out of a metal case. That is, notoriously difficult to do. It's one of the reasons there's so many plastic backed phones and Apple did glass backed phones for a while. Yeah. Is getting that signal out of metal is hard.
You took Nokia. I mean, Nokia made a stainless steel phone once, and everyone was trying to wonder how they managed to engineer that. It's just non-trivial work.
It's for people who don't want to be bothered.
I don't want the calls. I don't want the texts. So beta 5 of iOS 9, we were talking about that peripherally earlier. I decided not, after kind of not great experiences with the Yosemite beta, not to use beta software on my devices. Even though for a long time I didn't do it because the NDA was so restrictive, I couldn't. But yeah. I think they've eased up a little bit that. You can talk about it, right?
You can do everything except for pictures or show video. So yeah. People are just showing a lot of pictures
so
and video.
So tell us. Yeah, right. You're not supposed to, but go ahead.
No. Yeah. No, I mean, they don't want, like, they'll tell you. And I'm sure it was the same with Andy. You get this whole paper from them saying, we're giving you this and you can preview it and blah, blah, blah. But please don't take screenshots and don't do video because the UI elements are changing. And if they're changing and someone sees a button here and then we don't release that button, they think we've stolen their button. And
Microsoft's really learned that. They got such heat for, like, icons on the early betas of Windows 10. And it's like, you don't want to spend energy, you know, talking about that. Because it's a temporary feature.
You set expectations. And so they asked was no screenshots, no video. So all we're getting is the screenshots and videos.
I know. Yeah. Well, that's your competitive advantage, right?
What was the social app last year that got into a huge, stupid kerfuffle because somebody had leaked out, not the company, but a tester had leaked out a screenshot in which this was an internal build. They had simply downloaded an icon library that was free to use for like non-commercial use. And so, oh, look, they're stealing this person's work and it's going to be this huge corporation. Said, look, you idiot, this is not something that they're shipping. This is something that nobody should have shown you to begin with.
Right.
Ugh, and now they got this whole PR thing they have to get ahead of, and
it's good for clicks.
Yeah, I was actually seeing people who were trying to review iOS 9, and one of them actually said, "I don't like to name names because it becomes a personal thing." And I just want to talk about the topic, but it's like, yeah, it did freeze on you. It's a beta.
Yeah.
You're not writing a review. Tell me what impressed you plus or minus about it, but don't.
I got an email from a viewer, and I won't name names, who said, you know, Apple Mail and El Capitan is not working well for me. Can you help? And it's like, no. I said, you know, I can't help because I don't use the betas. But, I mean, the real truth of it is it's a beta.
And until recently, you could leave reviews for apps. And the developer couldn't do anything. I wish they would stop the star ratings and things, too. Yeah. But at least they've taken some steps to prevent that.
So, give us your review. Somebody in the chat room, Amiyashi, is saying both iOS 9 on the iPhone 6 Plus is running great. And El Capitan on her MacBook Pro is running great. Same for all.
But it's not. So anecdotes aren't those singular for data. So like I have three different machines here that have like developer build and the public beta build. And some of them were clean installed and some of them were upgraded. And they all, some things work great on one, but not on the other. And it's really going to depend entirely on your precise set of circumstances, what your experience is. And when you download the next beta, because you have to keep updating the betas, it could be completely different. So I don't think it's never a fair thing to say the beta is working badly or good, because that could change for person and for week.
Yeah,
but in general, I mean, it seems very stable. It seems solid. The things that they told us were going to be coming look to be in good shape to be coming.
Here's why it's relevant. We're probably getting close to the final version, right?
If they follow the same pattern, the GM will come out the day of the event, and then the final release version will come out 8 days after the event.
So there might be one more beta before we're done.
They usually slow down right before the end because they want to spend their time polishing it and not worrying about releasing more beta. So file your bugs immediately. It's going to run out of time.
The term that I heard was that there's a certain point at which we have to put the panels back on the body. We have to make sure that the paint is touched up.
I like it.
That's what we're focusing on for the last couple of weeks. And unless it causes the thing to catch fire, that's what we're going to be concentrating on.
But I think that if we see that, if we see, you know, all the stuff we're talking about, September 9th should be a reasonably good day to cover it. I mean, they seem like they have enough potential energy to talk about a lot of things.
I'm hoping they do it September 8th for purely selfish reasons. Then we could do Mac Break Weekly right after. Otherwise, we're going to do Mac Break Weekly without knowing and then have to wait a week to talk about it.
Well, no, it means that we can break all kinds of stories, and by the time we have to do the next Mac break, everyone's forgotten that we were wrong about everything.
Okay, that's a good point. Actually, I was thinking maybe we'll let you know, but maybe we'll flip flop Mac Break Weekly with Security Now or something, and put it on Wednesday. What would we have to flip flop with? We'd have to flip flop with Twig or Windows Weekly. So maybe we'll do that. Would you guys be interested in joining me September 9th?
Absolutely. Yeah, sounds good to me.
A little bit about this. Pencil that in there. Here's victory for Apple Pay. Remember that Rite Aid, the drugstore, yanked Apple Pay, yanked all touch to pay because they were a partner in the currency system, which was created by Walgreens in order to fight Apple Pay. Well, Rite Aid they're capitulating. They're going to start accepting Apple Pay. Now, I don't know The folks at Currency said right away, oh, no, we don't prohibit people from doing that. But I noticed...
They did. They had exclusivity contracts that are expiring right around now.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah. Okay. I heard that they had a 3-year exclusivity where they couldn't take other payment systems.
CVS, on the other hand, is saying that at this time they cannot accept any mobile payments with an NFC technology. We are in the process of evaluating mobile payment options for our customers.
There was this hilarious article. I forget which online. It was a major online publication. And there were two surveys that came out last week. One that said Apple Pay adoption was on the rise. And one that said that Apple Pay adoption was on the decline. And it was a bomb. And the one on the rise said, you know, we interviewed this many people. And this is the statistics for it. And the plus or minuses. And here's our results. And the one that said it was on a decline said, hey, we're at this conference with our buddies. And this guy is the CEO of Loop Pay. What do you think of Apple Pay?
And Samsung's competitor.
Doesn't disclose that it's owned by Samsung, that he's a Samsung employee now, and that he's got a competing service. So, I mean, the whole narrative around Apple Pay in the media is very interesting to watch.
There is one big Android phone coming soon, the OnePlus 2 from OnePlus, Chinese company, that is not including NFC. And they said, we're going to leave it out because we don't feel like touch-to-pay is going to be a big issue for another 18 months to 2 years, and by then you'll have a new phone. It kind of sounds like Apple last year.
Well, they're not technically wrong, because I Apple Pay and Google Pay both use the same technologies, and they're almost always compatible with each other. Any terminal that takes one will take the other. But again, I'm a huge freaking nerd. I love my Android phone. I had been carrying my Android phone for a full time for a year and a half. This phone had the ability to do what was then Google Wallet. I was not reminded that I had this ability and started using it until I started writing about Apple Pay. So there's a problem, and there's a difference between having the technology available and having users that both know about it and care about it. Apple is exemplary at not only building phones that have this payment system built in, not only putting logos at point of sale, but also telling their users about this thing and getting them excited enough to try to use it.
There's something to be said for that, because I have Google Wallet on my Android phones and NFC. I don't think I've ever used it, whereas I have used Apple Pay many times.
As soon as I started using it, you couldn't stop me from using it.
It's fun.
No matter where you get it. I will say that the Apple Watch has the best contactless, even though you've the best NFC payment system I've ever seen, and that includes the iPhone 6. But not just the ability to simply, I've got my phone out, I tap it against this thing, wait for a beep, I put it back in my pocket. I don't have to. The number of times where I have paid for something with a credit card and I'm in line like a Target or something, and I just want, and they're having trouble like ringing something up or something, and I just want to reach over the counter and grab it and flip it over because they put the number, they put it on top of the register with the numbers facing outward and anybody can see those numbers. And the idea that all I had to do was tap, now my responsibility is out of my hands and this is going to be a safe transaction. Again, it's a great thing, and it's amazing that Google has done such a poor job of getting people on board.
And I think that that's one of the things that that I find is that the more I use Apple Pay, the more sensitive I am to handing off my credit card.
Yeah.
It just starts to build up like, oh, this is really not a good idea.
Is there any touch to pay in Rwanda? Or are you able to use that?
I haven't really tried that much. At the hotels or wherever I've been having dinner, I've just been using a credit card, like a regular credit card.
Yeah.
But I haven't really tried. I wouldn't be surprised if the penetration isn't pretty heavy here in the next 2 or 3 years. They have, they're going to have 95% LTE penetration throughout the country in the next 2 years at the rate they're going. And so, and they've got fiber everywhere. It's very technology driven country. So I think that, I wouldn't be surprised if it was, but I don't notice it right now.
It was super exciting for me yesterday because American Express added corporate cards, and there's no Apple Pay in Canada, but Mobile Nations is an American company, and we use American Express for our corporate cards. So I was able to add it. Now I feel like I have bootleg Apple Pay in Canada, and we have Tap to Pay everywhere. Like I think I've said this before, but fast food restaurants, department stores, farm, everyone just has Tap to Pay. So I'm eager to go out and give it a try.
Well, and one of the things that I think that one of the reasons Rite Aid probably jumped quicker is because they're also highly commoditized. And, there are so many times when there is a Walgreens, a Rite Aid, and a CVS within a block and a half.
Yeah.
And I know that I choose Walgreens in Pittsburgh because it's right next to the CVS, and I can use Apple Pay versus having to figure out, pull out my credit card and all that other stuff. So It's an easy choice. And I think that a lot of companies that are in the currency that are in a commoditized market, I think, you know, have to jump, have to allow it because the people will make choices. And the people who have, iPhones, statistically buy more stuff.
they clearly have lower buying resistance and more money to spend.
Yeah, yeah. I'll take two.
It's a self-selecting thing.
You got any Apple Watches? Yeah. I'll buy that too.
August 15th. Don't run into a Rite Aid today. They don't have it yet. So August 15th, they're going to roll that out. I have to think that also has something to do with a lack of any currency ability to pay yet, and like it hasn't rolled out. No, so at some point you go, okay, screw it. We're just going to go with Apple Pay.
It's the implementation was also like not all the implementations, but the one that it's got the horrible. Most publicity was the one where you had to either present or scan a QV. And it was entirely built so that Walmart and their friends would not have to pay credit card fees. It was not built to make customer lives easier, transactions more secure and more private. And that's the sort of thing that Apple Pay and Google Wallet are doing. So they're just better services, better done, better realized.
Yeah.
Not only that, but collecting personal, private user information, consumer information that they can then apply from store to store to store, brand to brand. There's so many deal breakers with currency that, it's rare that I've wind up telling people about a product that has not shipped yet. Expect that you should not use this. Expect that you should never sign up for this. Expect that you should not even experiment with this, even temporarily, because everything I've seen about this so far is just such a huge red flag that I kind of don't want to be tied into the same water and sewage system that currency is also tied into, because at some point my faucets are going to be bleeding out methane gas because it's just terrible.
Give us your bank account number. You can trust us. We promise. We've never had a breach. I think
that, again, it's the fact that Apple, doesn't have, their game is to make it really easy to use their product, to use their services. They're not trying to sell you ads. They're not trying to sell you more, detergent. They're not trying to, they're trying to make it, they're distinguish themselves and make it easier. And I think that for a lot of people that feels less icky.
Alex, have you decided if you're going to make the DXO1 your pick of the week or not?
I'm not going to do it this week. I'm still testing.
Okay. Can I show some pictures?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we could talk a little bit about it now, and then you could save it and give us your review next week. Okay. So the idea is this plugs in just by the Thunderbolt port right into your iPhone. And I presume the pictures on your Facebook page are, by the way, with the DXO1, right?
Yeah, they're all DXO1.
This whole travel blog was just an excuse to mess with the DXO. Well,
I do this. I post a lot more photos on Twitter or Facebook or other things every time I come to Rwanda. It's something that I, it's a time when I'm not as restricted.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Not that I have restrictions, but you also have some. You're sitting in an airport lounge. There's not much else to do.
It gives me something to do. It's kind of fun. I show things and talk about, my things. But, here you can see this is all candlelight. So this is pretty good.
Performance. Yeah, this is amazing. And it's heavily scrunched by Facebook, too. So, this isn't going to be the best. You should put it on, somewhere where they don't compress it.
When I do a more of a review, I can.
The detail looks really good, I have to say. Color's excellent.
I'm really looking forward to your review. Yeah. I don't have one yet, and an intriguing idea. 600. It's kind of like the story I told about the Concorde, that there have to be a lot of people for whom compactness is such a huge deal that they're willing to spend $600 for a camera that costs as much as
clearly Alex cares about compactness.
But we're taking really great pictures. Yeah,
It's worth it. Here's his luggage cart. Was this your carry-on?
the carry-on is on the top there. The rest of it all was, the rest of it was the pack.
What is it? Penguin cases? What do you use? Pelican cases. Wrong animal. They must love you.
A lot of Pelican cases. Yeah, there's a lot of groans when I show up because we're pretty surgical about our stuff. And here you can see the larger sensor there. You're taking a picture there, and it's a pretty short depth of field. So,
You're pretty close. Are you pretty close at this point?
I'm sitting. I'm just.
So it has a fairly close focal point, like a foot maybe?
Yeah. Exactly what it is, but it's, it is,
I travel a lot. I just stopped taking an SLR. I try to 4/3. I stopped taking that. You know, it's just I have so much stuff. If you've ever picked up my backpack, I mean, I have a lot of stuff in it, and I don't want to add another large camera. And so being able to put something in my front pocket that's going to turn my camera into something that's going to create images that I actually want to use, that's the test.
Yeah.
So that's what, you know, we're kind of fiddling with right now.
Yeah.
And this is on the other side of this. This is the Turkish Airlines.
Very nice.
Star Alliance lounge.
Yeah, it's the very best nice. Lounge.
In the world so far.
Nicer than the one I was in at Ataturk. I can tell you that right now.
But you can see, you know, just they're really nice images.
I would say midway between a point and shoot and an SLR. I mean, it's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's hard to tell. It's Facebook and all, but.
Right. Yeah.
I got to say, I think the first choice you have to make when you're selecting a camera is this something that I'm willing to carry with me even when I have no intention of taking pictures?
Right.
That's almost the most important thing and question you can ask yourself.
By the way, this was a very useful tip, Alex. I never thought of this. He takes a picture of his luggage tags in case he loses the luggage tags.
And they'll scan it. You can actually zoom up on that, and they'll scan it
that's
when you lose your bag, and they'll tell you where it is. And it's,
although I have to admit, I've never been to an airport in the last 2 years that ever. Nobody's looked at these in years.
How I get all
when you lose your bag, they look at them.
Oh, when you lose your bag.
Yeah, when your bag doesn't, you know.
Didn't they used really to, like, check as you were leaving the airport? They would compare? I remember that happening.
Oh, yeah. They do that in some countries. There's a handful of countries. Johannesburg does that a little bit and a couple other ones. But for the most part, the big thing is you need those if you lose your bag. That's
right.
Where
no, that's a good point. Yeah.
You think that they'd have it tied to your... You know, but it's always way faster if you have those tags, you know. And so, and we put a lot of stuff in our bags. And so I make sure that they use both of the little stickers and they put it on
this
two different
probably,
places.
I'm sure 10, 20 grand in that big Pelican case.
More.
Video equipment?
Yeah. That's three PTZ cameras and a controller. So it was a lot of gear.
I like how you're doing before and after pictures of the luggage carts in both airports.
Well, so I'm really into luggage carts because
apparently,
because they are your life.
I spent a lot of time putting a lot of stuff on luggage carts, and I mean, I'll show you some pictures sometime of some of the stuff. We pile them really high. We get straps to strap them to the luggage carts, and we'll have them stacked higher than us. I mean, if you're concentrated on two luggage carts that you can push yourself, you can get 14 to 15 of those Pelican cases up there, you know. And so, but it's like a Tetris thing to get it all working, you know. And so, but there are very important things about this. So you know, that not having a lip. So like Pittsburgh's and a couple other, you know, like I think New York have a lip on the front of the luggage
rack,
which means you can't hang things. Oh, it's horrible.
That limits the size of the bag you could put on there.
Oh, and you're just like, really? And anyway, so they...
By the way, normal people like the lip. Because it keeps the bag from falling off.
I think the normal people don't know any better. They just don't... maybe. They're already leaning back. You're not... You know, it's not going to fall forward. Anyway, so it's... I'm experimenting with the idea of just kind of blogging about travel, and I talk about little tips and tricks and things that I'm doing. And
you do more of it than a human. Yeah.
So
these are the worst seats I've ever seen. United has these seats now on the domestic flights.
Oh my gosh, lawn chairs.
Terrible.
Lawn chairs. Oh, and it's okay. This was only a 1 hour flight, so it wasn't that bad.
That's not so bad.
You do cross continental in those chairs and you cannot get up. You know, like it's, and I thought for a while it was only on the short ones. This was me. After I bought it, I realized I hadn't gotten the right adapter. And so I was like, why didn't they just leave the plug as a regular USB and then, because it's the same power, you know, output. Just leave it as a regular USB, and then the cable that I get is the regular USB to
USB-C.
But
instead, you have to have some special dang thing. I agree. Know. I'm with you. Nice shoes.
Yeah, that's my new shoes.
They're also USB-C.
And here's a drone.
But I took now you're no longer in the trip.
On the trip, my friends.
Yeah, this is just me taking drones. That was in the last trip. You can see that I don't take a lot of photos between the times I'm in Rwanda. So this is from my last trip in Rwanda. This big, I found a big pile.
Are you on Facebook? Are you public? Can people follow you without being a friend?
Yeah. I'm public, and those are all public posts.
Good.
And
so people can see those images for themselves. Is it at facebook.com/AlexLindsay?
I think it's Alex B. Lindsay.
Alex B. Lindsay.
Someone else has Alex Lindsay.
Some bastard also named
Alex. There's a guy in Australia that beats me every single time.
Son of a gun.
He's awake 16 hours earlier.
All right. Yeah, gentlemen, ready? Go ahead, Andy.
Do a little favor. Mark that section of video where he talks about stacking those cases 10 high, because if he accidentally kills a child at baggage claim at some point, we're going to need to make sure that's nowhere. You'll save our friend from a lengthy jail term.
Burn the video.
It's secure. It's secure.
We'll get a special call late at night. Burn the video.
The rare earth magnetic cases.
I'm sorry, we'll go to Picks of the Week, but you just made me think, I have to know at some point in the future, not today, I have to know what Alex Lindsay's go bag looks like, the one that he grabs when he needs to run someplace.
I love it.
That's got to be something fantastic.
I will post my bags, so I'll show what my bag looks like before the end of this trip.
There's a knock at the front door, and you know you got to leave by the back door. You can only grab something.
If the president orders Alex to go, you don't know when you're going to be using your real name again.
Most of our guys have instructions to have one, so that, not to get out of way, get out of trouble, but mostly just because we call them and say you have 4 hours to be in an airport to go to Turkey or something like that to do an event. So, but I'll post my. My bags are pretty small. I don't like to check bags unless it's gear. So I really only check Pelican cases. So
our show today brought to you by Pelican cases. We should actually. Can we talk to them? I think we should.
Pelican Collier.
My carry-on is a Pelican.
I wish. I would love Pelican cases as a sponsor.
I would too. Yeah.
I don't know how many. I think I have 60 or 70 of those things downstairs. So.
Actually, in point of reality, we are sponsoring Pelican case. With our hard dollars. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the place, you know this, to make a website that will never go down. They do the best hosting and the best software sitting on top of it to make a gorgeous site. In fact, if you go to squarespace.com and take a look at some of the beautiful sites that have been built with Squarespace, you realize this isn't your father's template engine. Oh, no. Not only are these sites gorgeous, they're functional. They're all mobile responsive. And by the way, that is not an easy thing to do. They look great no matter what size screen you're looking at them with. And that's important because nowadays more and more of your visitors come from mobile. Really important. Every site, every template has e-commerce built in, and they have a great e-commerce platform. They're offering right now, as a way to help promote your new site, your new Squarespace site, $100 in AdWord credits when you sign up for the business or commerce plan. But right now, what you should do is just go to squarespace.com, click the Get Started button, and try it out. You get 2 weeks, no credit card needed, to set up a site. You can even import content from your existing site so you can really feel like, see what it would look like with your stuff. Even though these are templates and some gorgeous designer templates, each Squarespace site is unique. In fact, if you look at the template, you'll see a variety of real sites using that template, and you'll see they all look different because Squarespace makes it so easy to customize. So, you see, these are all the same template, but they're all different. Very visual in every respect, I got to say. Go to squarespace.com. We're talking hosting and software combined, meshed, to give you and your users the best experience. Use the offer code MACBREAK and get 10% off when you decide to buy. But again, you don't need to buy or even give them a credit card if you want to try it. Squarespace.com. When you do buy, if you've used the offer code MACBREAK, you'll get 10% off and $100 in AdWords credits for business and commerce customers. Build it beautiful. So gorgeous. Squarespace.com. We always talk about, kind of the behind-the-scenes techie stuff of Squarespace. But really, it's aesthetically so satisfying, so pleasing. Let's get your pick of the week. We'll start over here on my right. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com.
So I just got this. This is an iHome plug. And while it looks just like a plug, it actually is compatible with HomeKit, which means once you set it up, you can anything you plug into it, you can turn on and off with your iPhone. And that might not sound like much until you realize that once you have HomeKit set up, everything that you put together can all be controlled all at one time with either the apps, but most excitedly with Siri. Serenity Call did a really good demo of this a couple of shows ago. But you can just say, turn on the fan, turn off the fan, turn on that light, turn off that light. And you can set up a variety of different situations where you have sort of groups set up under a certain name. So you could say, like I did earlier, enable game mode or good night. And then it'll just turn off everything that can be turned off in the house. You don't have to worry about getting up and crossing there and making sure the lights are off in the garage. I saw a demo of this at CES, and they had it hooked up to a fan, and they would just say, Siri, turn the fan on, Siri, turn the fan off. And it worked remarkably well, and that was back in January. Since then, they've been doing a lot to make the security better, especially a lot of Wi-Fi chipsets weren't that secure. And Apple is transiting passwords over the network because they want to make it super easy to use. So it had to be really secure. And when you look at stories about like cars getting hijacked, I don't want someone sitting outside my house and getting into my network and you know, turning my things on and off or opening locks or stuff like that. So once you start seeing the new Google and Apple products, sort of like CarPlay and Android Auto, but for the home, to me, this is just a better way of implementing and doing it. Because it's all integrated together, works off a common interface, is secure. You don't have to worry about adding big holes to your network. And I've got a couple of these now. I'm going to be trying them out. But the big problem at first is not a lot of people include the stuff in their products. And with the plug, while it looks goofy, it just means that anything you plug into it suddenly becomes part of your HomeKit network. So I'm going to put a couple of these around the house and try them out. But I'm really excited to have sort of like the Star Trek reality now.
Really? That's the Star Trek reality?
Well, no, like, you just use your voice, right? Computer, lights on, okay. Computer, Earl Grey Hunt.
I had to think about that for a moment. I thought, voice, Leo. Does this have phasers?
Okay. Oh, that would be great. I mean, if the next iPhone could shoot phasers out of the lightning port.
Alex,
I'd settle for a beer out of the lightning port.
How much is that, by the way?
I don't know because they just sent it to me, but I will look it up.
I don't think they're expensive. I'm trying to remember. Yeah.
But they are. There's very few and far between right now, so this is one of the few that shipped already.
Nice. Alex Lindsay, your pick of the week. He's silent. His picture looks great, though.
How's that? Is that better?
Very nice.
There we go. So last week, my grandmother's 94, and she wanted to play her dulcimer, and you know. It had been sitting somewhere for maybe 20 years or something, or 15 years. And so I had to tune it or figure out how to tune a dulcimer. And I don't really know how to tune anything. So I went up to, you know, of course, the web and just Googled dulcimers. And it turns out there's a bunch of different ways to tune it. So I plucked on it. And I used a program that I just thought was, I don't know. I haven't used it a ton, but I just have to say that the fact that I could do this, where it's a program on the iPhone called Pitch Perfect, and you know it's just a frequency one, but it does a fairly good job of you know getting the frequencies and telling you exactly what hertz you're using. So it's you know it's just this little guy here, and you know, and I tuned the dulcimer. Like I just sat there, I set my phone next to it and I just plucked it and turned it and just watched this little line move over closer to the note that I was trying to get to. And when I finished, it sounded great. Like it was tuned by a professional. So if you ever need to tune something, it's like a dollar or two. It's not a very expensive app. But it worked very well. And I was just kind of, there's a whole bunch of them out there. I bought, you know me, I bought like three or four of them, and this was the only one that I felt really worked very well. So anyway, I don't think it has a dulcimer in there, but I just figured out what the pitches were. I mean, it didn't, you know, for, you know, if you actually had one of the instruments in there, it'd probably be even better. But anyway, that's Pitch Perfect. And it was a fun experience.
Not the movie, not Pitch Perfect 2, not Pitch Perfect 1, Pitch Perfect the app.
Exactly.
Can somebody sing a B flat and we can test it?
Give me a bouncy beat.
Mr. Andy Hanako, your pick of the week.
I got a couple of picks that are highly conventional. It is it's an Anker Bluetooth keyboard and Anker ergonomic 2.5 gigahertz wireless mouse that is wireless but not Bluetooth. It has the key feature that you see in almost everything I've ever bought from Anker, which is cost damn near next to nothing compared to the alternatives, and it's about 90 to 95% as well made and as useful. The keyboard costs $25 and is a full-sized keyboard that is as comfortable to use as pretty much any other keyboard that I've used has these notebook-style keys. Bluetooth works great. The mouse, it costs all of $10, and it's so good that pretty much I'm replacing wired mouses that I have inside my house with these, kind of like replacing compact fluorescent bulbs with LED bulbs, because they're $10, you may as well just get those cables out of your way. And whereas the mouse is, I mean, there's really no complaints I can possibly make about it. I mean, it's got multiple buttons, it's got a clickable scroll wheel, it has selectable DPI. So if you want to go from high DPI to low DPI, you can just tap a button in order to do it. Runs off two easy to find AA batteries, don't need to recharge it. The only complaint about this is that I wish that the bed were a little bit stronger. As you can see, you can put some flex into
How
it.
How many times have I said that?
Hey-ho. You can put some flex into it. Now, it lays flat on the desktop, but it means that it's something to at least consider if you're buying something to be part of a mobile kit for your iPad or your phone. I've talked about foldable and miniature keyboards in Picks of the Week in the past, but I think that if you really are going to be writing, working on your phone or an iPad, there is nothing that can substitute for a full-sized keyboard. That's the difference between actually being productive and kind of limping along with whatever you have. And so for $25, this is as good as some of the $50 and $75 keyboards that you can get that are made only a little bit better. It's worth having because, again, $25. The only thing I'm saying is that it's the one where you'd want to be a little bit careful of sticking it in your bag, and then you're especially when you're packing your hotel room in a hurry to get back home. So you stuff this in your carry-on bag, and then you take it out because, you know, you're in the middle of flights, you want to do some work, and because it's been sitting like this twisted for a good 4 hours in your bag, suddenly it's all wibbly wobbly on the table. So that's the only drawback of this one, but otherwise it's a fantastic keyboard and certainly really, really good value. It charges via micro USB. It's the sort of stuff, these are the sort of accessories that I really, really like. You know that I'm attracted towards stuff that's affordable and stuff that people can just simply have. So whether you are, if this is something where you don't have $100 worth of interest in a mobile keyboard, but you're certainly willing to spend $25, or like I'm doing with my mouses where I just have, 10 years ago, I was at the MIT flea market and someone had torn down a Microsoft Windows lab, and I bought literally a box of USB Microsoft Generation 2 USB mouses, scroll wheel mouses, for something $10. And so over the past 10 years, I've just been sort of every time I need a mouse, just grab one out of the box. Whenever it breaks 3 or 4 years later, throw it away, get another one from the box. So I'm just sort of steadily replacing ones that still work with mouses like this.
Okay, now I gotta mention something. Because if I don't, I'm going to get the email. Clearly, you prefer mouses to mice.
Yes.
Would you like to explain?
Because this is a mouse.
Yeah.
Many of these, you add an S to the end of it. Mice, M-I-C-E, is how you refer to groups of the living organism of mouse.
Is that official?
I've just said it. And because I set the standards of rationality for the world.
What does the Chicago Manual of Style say about this?
It's the my influence and my correctness permeates the universe.
Did you ask Roger Ebert before he passed away? Because I would actually, you know what? The Wired Style Guide says it's mouses.
There you go.
Yep. Jackie Chang is never wrong.
Yep. This is the Microsoft Manual of Style for Technical Publications, published in 1995, says avoid the plural mice. However, they say, they kind of punt, if you need to refer to more than one of a mousing device, call them mouse devices.
See, the really nice thing about saying mouses instead of mice is that you can correct people when you think they've said it wrong and be profoundly arrogant about your choice as though it's official.
That's mouses.
It's like when BlackBerry said you couldn't pluralize their names. You had to say BlackBerry handsets.
I'm sorry. Men?
I've never heard of the GIF format. What is the GIF graphics format? I've never heard of that.
The G is silent, Andy.
Is that something that came out of SIGGRAPH this year?
I'm sorry. I just had to bring
that up. You meant to say GIF. Oh, okay. I usually deal with people who are very technologically savvy. They say things correctly.
You know, I'm trying to think what I would say. I think I would say mice, but I agree with you. Mouses is plural for the device.
I would not correct you. At some point, I made the deliberate choice that it should be mouses because that sounds right for me. I would not correct somebody for saying
that. Now, would your copy editor fix that if you wrote mouses in a piece?
I break in my copy editors. where I at some point I say the big thing is I don't give a damn. And it's correct to D-A-M-N after saying, excuse me, that so, refers
yeah,
to
Tinker's Dam, and it's not in, yeah.
Mickey Mouse's which is
so yes, the Mouse's is what gets copied out of me, which is a good time as any to steal 20 seconds worth of time to say bon voyage to my Sun-Times editor, Craig Newman, who's been my editor for years and years and years, and he's moving on to other things, and I miss him already and don't know what I'm going to do without him because he really is one of the great editors out there. As I said on Twitter, there are editors who look for your source of creativity and passion and ambition and pour sand on it. And then there are editors who look at, who find that and pour gasoline on it to cause it to, yes, encourage it to grow. And Craig was definitely one of those guys. So he will still be my friend, but I'm just sad that he's not no longer going to be my editor.
Wonderful New Yorker piece by Mary Norris, who was for many years a copy editor at the New Yorker. She's actually written a book now called Between You and Me, Confessions of a Comma Queen. And it is great reading. As all, well, certainly, Alex, you've written for text,
yeah,
for print.
I have.
As anybody on this panel knows, the copy editor is the single most important person in your life, for good or ill. And it's great. She talks about the battles she's had with various well-known authors. And it's really great. One thing she says, though, is there are some people who submit to The New Yorker who you just don't second-guess them. They're who's the guy who used to write those long pieces about you, is McPhee, John McPhee. So you don't have to copy edit him. In fact, if he says something and you go, you change your tune. If he says Mouses, you say Mouses. So that's one pick. Between You and Me, Confessions of a Comma Queen, highly recommended. And there is an Audible version of it, which I have not listened to. Awesome. I'm going have to get that. you guys have heard of Carrot?
Yep.
AI construct with a heart of weapons-grade plutonium. Carrot does a whole bunch of iOS apps, including the Carrot Calorie Counter, your judgmental calorie counter, Carrot Fit, your judgmental fitness overlord. We talked on iOS today about Carrot Weather, the weather robot with a personality. Well, good news. Today they released Carrot Weather for your Mac. Ridiculous price, but of course that's what you'd expect. $10. And they say that's 25% off. I don't know if you need a snarky weather forecast app for your Macintosh, but it's a lot of fun. And they've added some nice features, including a time machine. So you can, who knows how accurate it is, but you can go back or forward and see what the weather was like back then. So we went back to April 11th, 2015, and it said, hey, by the way, can we make a quick pit stop in 1984 so I can kill John Connor? Let's see how it is in Rwanda. Let's see how you're doing.
Brian Mueller is an evil genius.
Yeah. Who is it?
Brian Mueller.
See, he writes the copy, huh?
Yeah. Well, he does all the Carrot apps.
You're checking the weather for tomorrow morning's walk of shame, aren't you? Yes, if I were in Rwanda, I would be. There's also something cool, which I haven't unlocked yet. Secret locations. Keep using me to unlock secret locations, each more wondrous than the last. We'll find out. There are 31 of them, and I have unlocked none.
I think Carrot Weather for iOS went to 2.0 today as well.
Ah, he's working.
Yep.
Can you ask him why it's $10?
The Mac, you want to make money. You know, he has to feed his carrot kids. They don't grow themselves.
I hope he does. And somebody, one of the reviewers who gives it only 3 stars says, hey, this is really well done. But there needs to be a snark meter. Look, if you buy Carrot, expect the snark. Bring on the snark. Ladies and gentlemen, we are done with Mac Break Weekly for this week. And as I mentioned, we'll do special coverage, whatever the day is. And we should, you know, usually don't they, when do they send out invites? Like a month before or a week before? A week before.
A week before.
Okay, so we'll know in 3 weeks.
And at WWDC, they didn't even send out invites, so like you never know with Apple.
You don't know with Apple. But maybe we'll have everybody in studio. That'd be kind of fun. Andy Inaka right now, he's back east in beautiful New England amidst the thunderstorms. You could find his work on the Chicago Sun-Times soon, a MacBook review, any minute now.
I'm sorry. I get hung up on these things. I just...
Were you debating mouses versus mices?
No, because we hold that truth to be self-evident.
Great to see you, as always, Andy. ReneeRitchies@iMore.com. A great place to go to get all the information you need to use your Apple stuff better. He's also on the Twitter at ReneeRitchie. He's in beautiful Montreal. And from Kilgally, which doesn't even have a weather forecast. It's so distant. I tried Kilgally. I only could find Burundi.
You know, it's Kigali. You probably were just
Kigali.
There's yeah, no Kigali.
Maybe I misspelled it. It's K-I-G-A-L-I. Oh, you're right. How close is Kigali to Burundi?
It's about a 3-hour drive. Okay. I think 3 or 4 hour drive.
So according to this, it's 69 degrees. Tomorrow, you're going to have a high of 85 with light rain starting in the afternoon, continuing to evening. Just so you know. Barbecue.
Thank you. I was worried.
How long are you going to be there?
I'm just here this week. So I'm here for meetings. Oh, good Lord. So
it takes you a week to fly there practically.
Oh, it only takes 30 hours. It's not a whole week. It's just a day and a half. Jeez. So it's
you can get to the moon in less than four times as much time.
Well, you know, you do get to sit in that nice. The layover is quite nice in Istanbul, and it's a very good flight. There's nothing hard. I mean, I've gotten kind of used to it. I've settled into the flight that I like, and I love coming down. This is kind of my recharge. Is working on this. So from everything else I do. So I'll be down here for a week. I'll be posting a lot more pictures from on Facebook publicly so people can look at them. And I'm probably going to, starting tomorrow, I was a little busy for the first few days, but I'll probably do some meerkatting. I've done it in the past where I pop it up and put it on the car and drive around Kigali and answer questions. So that'll probably be happening tomorrow afternoon or so for the rest of the time I'm here.
One last note before we wrap up, a very happy birthday to our spiritual father and the creator of the personal computer we love, known as the Apple computer, Steve Wozniak, hits 60 years old today. 65 years old. They had a big party 5 years ago at the Computer History Museum for Steve, I remember. 65. Who'd have thunk it? That young guy.
Thank you, Woz.
Thank you, Woz. Yes. Thank you. Great guy. And really the heart of the personal computer industry, I think.
Can I also say that there is nobody I'm more looking forward to being when those really cool old guys, like in 10 years time, when he starts to look like he's in his 70s and 80s, he will be like the Amazing Randy, where he's like the cool, like one of those really cool old guys. He's cool, but he's not really old yet. At some point, he's just going to be.
Tron 2, Kevin Flynn.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We do Mac Break Weekly, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC every Tuesday on the show. If you want to watch live, we'd love it if you did. Chat room is a big part of the program. But if you can't watch live, please get the on-demand versions. They're all available everywhere you can.